The following program is an MLWRadio.com production.
Welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews, and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network. I'm your host, Strigger, and as always, joined by Dylan Fox, the mastermind behind March Madness. Now, Dylan, since it's April now, by the mathematics, it is very clear that March is over. And that means facts. And that means that March Madness is also over.
That's true. We're at the closing stages. The polls are still going on, but both of them are kind of one-sided at this point. In fact, one's literally going to end while we're recording, the Joshi version. So congratulations, and barring a spectacular, strange doubling of votes to side with Utami, Shuri will win the March Madness in Joshi. And that was great. Kota Minoura won the in-pit, the National Pro-Res Invitational Tournament. What a winners there with Kota Minoura and Shuri. Both very deserving, in my opinion. The voters got it right. It looks like Nakajima will win the men's version. There's still a day and a half left, though, of that. So things could change. Maybe Uncle June could get a shot there. But it looks like Katsuhiko Nakajima will be. You can always find out on our Twitter if you want the official results on there. Big wins, big stuff there, and just big things going on in general with pro wrestling, and especially Japanese pro wrestling, as always, but all over the world. We just had WrestleMania weekend while we were off, in our thing. There was about a million shows that happened.
Yes.
And, you know, I was feeling electrified by the end of this. I told everybody, when WrestleMania weekend started, I didn't even know Bloodsport was happening, like, because I was so out of it. And that's usually a show I always look forward to. But after everything happened, probably WrestleMania Night 1 came around, Mama was going crazy over it. Ken was super pissed about Cody Rhodes, as he always is. That's like the main thing in his life right now, is just being very angry at Cody Rhodes and AEW.
Maybe Ken is this mythical casual fan that everybody talks about.
If you ask him, he say, I don't like American wrestling, no matter what. But he always spends time to dislike Cody Rhodes and AEW as well on there. But after all that happened, I was electrified, as I said. I ended up watching like 7 shows, even on the Patreon, patreon.com/EasternLariat. I did a whole show covering all 7 of the shows I watched. Yeah, World on Lucha, For the Culture, Super Card of Honor, a bunch more. Impact, I even watched their show on there. Jay White had a great match. Shout out Switchblade with Chris Sabin. I really enjoyed that. Lots of good stuff all over the place. Lots of Japanese contingent, too, involved in the wrestling scene that weekend, as there will be going forward, too, as there always is. Good inter-promotional stuff going on with AEW, New Japan, DDT, and Tokyo Joshi's going to get there. Man, I'm like I said, I'm feeling pretty happy about everything going on with wrestling right now. I'm feeling like, I've got my Keyblade ready. I'm swinging right now.
Swinging!
That's right, and I'm ready to go.
Yes, I also watched some stuff on WrestleMania weekend, minus WrestleMania, of course. I watched the WrestleCon Mark Hitchcock Memorial Show. You mentioned The Collective. I've also seen most of the shows that you mentioned. I've not seen The World on Lucha yet. I'll probably catch up on that too. I want to watch Impact as well, so I'm going to put that up on my backlog because that show really sounded very good. So, everything around WrestleMania weekend was a big success, I thought, for the promotions involved. And, of course, for Ring of Honor, their return was a very big success as well with Supercard of Honor, a show that I rated 9 out of 10, which had a match, a tag team match that will probably end up very high in everybody's top 10 in the year-end awards, I would assume, because the Briscoes versus FTR blew the roof off the building. And I've put it on Twitter. This is one of those matches that are that is a dream match on paper, and that also turned out to be a true dream match in execution, because usually these matches, they have a very high bar of expectations from the fans going in. But this time, I think everything clicked from the wrestlers and their willingness to go through with all the stuff that they went through in this match, and of course the crowd reactions there too. So if you have not seen Briscoes versus FTR, I don't know who hasn't seen that, but if you haven't, please go back and check out Supercard of Honor from Ring of Honor, because it was a great show.
Oh, definitely that match was amazing. Definitely a great match of the year candidate already. You know, you can make a case for all kinds of stuff right now, depending on your taste in wrestling. And that one was at the top of the list, though, I think, for myself, you, and many other people, in terms of the greatest matches on there. So that was some big stuff going down on WrestleMania weekend, and a lot going on in Japanese wrestling, too. As I know what we're talking about on the show. You've told me what we're talking about.
Yes.
And, man, there's a lot, as it turns out. But that's the beauty of the Eastern Lariat. We go through all the different corners of the wrestling spectrum right now, and I can't wait to get into it.
Yeah, and all these different corners of the wrestling spectrum seemingly were on one card on April 10 for Zero One's 20th and 21st anniversary show. Because going back last year, they were going to have their Sumo Hall show at the beginning of the year as well. Like in March, I think, was the show supposed to happen. And then the Sumo Association stripped them of the building, so they couldn't run in Sumo Hall. So they figured they will just postpone their 20th anniversary for 1 year. And we all figured, how is this show going to look like? And, well, basically there was talent from all corners of wrestling, just like I said, from all corners of Japanese wrestling, from New Japan, Pro Wrestling Noah, Big Japan, to Tradition, All Japan, Diana, Ice Ribbon, 2AW, Ganbare Pro, JTO, all these different promotions were represented. A-Team even had a match on this card. It was a wild, wild card. It was 16 matches. The show was, I think, 6 or 7 hours long. Yeah, and unfortunately, it ended with the world title match between champion Takashi Sugiura against challenger Shinjiro Otani, who had only returned in this match. He had this, I think he had a broken arm last year in September, and he was out since then. And this match was his first match back since then. He always pops up on these Ganbare Pro shows, for example, and he just fires up the crowds at the end of the show, and at the beginning of the shows as well, too. But here he was wrestling for the world title, and of course, I assume that he was going to win the title in the main event of the anniversary show for Zero One as the representative of his company. But yeah, we've all read it by now, and I was following along live, not watching live, but I followed along on Twitter live, and I saw that the match ended in a ref stop after a German suplex from Sugiura, and of course it couldn't be the finish that they were planning. It was very obvious very early after the match ended that this wasn't the finish that was supposed to happen. The scenery was very confusing, very chaotic, because it seemed like there were no paramedics in Sumo Hall, and it took a long time until paramedics appeared to take care of Shinjiro Otani. And it seemed like that everybody completely lost their heads with this situation, and they didn't really know what to do. And the craziest part of all of this was that apparently someone backstage wanted to conclude the show. So they sent out poor Shoki Kitamura, who had to do the traditional 3-2-1-0-1 that they do at the end of each 0-1 show, But Shinjiro Otani was still lying inside the ring because after Sugiura hit him with a German suplex into the corner pad, he couldn't move anymore. And there is this, I don't know how old Kitamura is, in his early 20s, I suppose, this young kid going out there having to do the show closure in the very moment that the president, the head of the company, is paralyzed inside the ring. 25 years old he is, by the way. Dylan, this was absolutely mind-boggling.
Well, first of all, I didn't see this show live, and I didn't watch a second of this main event or anything that happened afterwards. I have no interest in ever watching it. Yeah. But when I saw that happened, that was like the first thing I messaged you afterwards. Like I was like, did they really do this? Yeah. You know, like did they really do this? And unfortunately, you know, on one hand, like you said, at the end of the day, somebody, you know, this is a crazy situation, and nobody knew what to do or how to end the show, and they were just trying to make the best of it, I'm sure. But at some point, you got to have some sense, you know? Like, this man is lying in the ring, and we don't know if he can move, if he will be able to move. Yeah. This is a serious injury. This isn't like, you know, somebody broke his hand or something. And I mean, that's painful, but this is like a real life injury right now. This man cannot move. And you're sending this kid out there. And, you know, I like I said, I don't know what happened, how it went. I'm sure his mind was probably all rattled. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he cried or anything. You know, he didn't know what's going on. This man, we don't know what his life is going to be like afterwards. So I was totally, like, just disgusting display. I can't even speak on how terrible this was, and yeah, just an awful way to end, you know, what was supposed to be, you know, a celebration show. Like, for Otani, it's tragic in so many ways.
Yeah, it is.
You know, the injury, and that's, no matter who it was, this is a tragic situation. But especially when you consider this man, this is his biggest match in years. You know, this is at Sumo Hall. You know, in front of over 3,000 fans, like, that's as big as 0-1's going to get. We all know that.
I saw pictures from the crowd. I'm highly doubting this crowd that they announced.
Yeah, they announced like 3,500 here.
Yeah, which, yeah,
may not be true.
But that's not really the point here.
Yeah, but no, whatever they announced, this is the biggest show that he's going to have in 0-1. Yeah. What 0-1's going to have. And, like, to come back, he came back just for this show, you know. Like, because it was such a special deal, it was such a big deal, he couldn't even wrestle on his own anniversary show last month, you know. And he just to see this man have such bad luck, and it's such bad timing. It's so awful. Like, my heart literally breaks for this. Again, it's bad because he is one of my, and I don't know if you agree with this, or, you know, or anybody out there, he is one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. I love his wrestling. I've always have. I've seen his career from young lion status to now. I've watched so much of it. And but if it was anybody, this would be scary and tragic and awful. And it's just, my heart is breaking for him. And my heart's breaking for Kitamura to be put in that position. That was totally reckless and irresponsible. And like I said, I try to give him the benefit of the doubt, because how do you handle a situation like this on the fly? It's easy to say in hindsight, but on the fly, you know, who knows what they were thinking? And we just don't have access to that. Obviously, with me and you, I'd be like, man, we can't do this. Like, we have to sort this Otani situation out and do everything we can. I had heard that something, this is just something I had read. I don't know if this is true or not. Maybe you can confirm it for sure. I had read that there weren't any medical staff or like paramedics or something.
That's what I heard, but I can't really say if that's appropriate. But I've also read that that wouldn't be uncommon for wrestling shows in Sumo Hall, but I'm not sure about it.
Yeah, but it seems like there was a lot up in the air. But regardless, it shouldn't have happened this way. And it's just, it's tragic for everyone involved. Like, there's no good that can even come out of it. And I can't believe they did it that way. And like I said, even on the fly, I can't imagine my mind would have – I would have tried to fight this happening if I were backstage or in any kind of position of power. But I just – I don't want to put the blame on anybody because it was such a crazy and tragic situation. And who knows what emotions were running around and what they had to think about, sponsors. Like, I don't know. Like, nobody knows at the end of the day.
I think there was a lot of pressure just behind 0-1.
On this particular show, too.
Yeah. I think even – I don't know that. I'm just assuming that – I'm assuming that they were pressured into doing this big show. Because someone wanted 0-1 to have a show on a big stage again, and it had to be Sumo Hall on the 20th anniversary. It couldn't have been Currican Hall because it's not big enough. So I assume that there was interest in 0-1 running this big show. And of course, 0-1 is being held together by Shinjiro Otani and Masato Tanaka, basically. And these two have been cornerstones from day one, and they are still the most important cornerstones in this day and age. And without these two, there really is no 0-1.
Yeah.
So Otani in the main event, very high-pressure situation. He wants to put up a great match. He goes all out, takes a huge risk, and takes this German suplex into the corner padding. So it's not like in America, of course, you have these three turnbuckle pads, and that is even more dangerous in American pro wrestling to do this move, I assume. But it's still dangerous here, nonetheless, even though the corner post is really padded. So it's like a one-piece padding in Japanese pro wrestling and not the three pads like in American wrestling. Still, though, it is a heavy impact on your body, and it looked, and from the pictures I saw, it looked like that Otani's body really completely combusted when he hit the ropes or when he hit the corner pad. And so he was taken to a hospital. And all we know now, one day after that, as we're recording, he still can't move. And that is not a good sign, I would say. Not a doctor, but really not a good sign. We have seen similar situations. Remember Yoshihiro Takayama? He still can't move to this day. Then again, we had Tomoki Honma, who took this DDT from Yado years ago. He was paralyzed as well, but he made a return to pro wrestling. He's not the same that he used to be before that, but he can move again and he can wrestle again. Much more important to him, I would say. So you really can't apply any logic right now to this situation. Everybody reacts differently, I would say, just from the experience from these two cases. So we can only hope for Shinjiro Otani that he'll be able to walk again.
That's the most important thing, more than anything else, that this man can have his life. And it was so tragic knowing that Hoshikawa was right there in the crowd and everything that he went through because of his injury in this company. Yeah. You know, that's what really was like shocking to me. And who even knows what he was thinking and everything going down there. And you had a pretty great moment with Hoshikawa and Mar Fuji earlier in the show, that I thought was pretty emotional. But yeah, for Otani to do it right there was just so tragic in so many ways. Like I said, there's so many layers, but just the fact that he was injured is just a horrible thing. And like you said, all we can do is hope and pray and hope that he can walk again and get his life back again. If he's somehow blessed enough to be able to wrestle again, that's great too. But most importantly, just please be healthy. And I hope that he gets well soon and is able to just, get his life back. And everything was 0-1. And it's just a terrible situation. Like I said, I have so many thoughts and so many different aspects of it that are just heartbreaking all around. And I'm so sad to even talk about it and think about it. I wish we were talking about how it could have been a great main event and everybody loved it. 0-1 had a big show for him. Yeah. But unfortunately, it ended this way, and it sucks.
Yeah, and as I said, you're not going to watch the main event ever. I think I'm really not sure if I really want to watch this show because I know how it ended.
And I watched this show, but I have to say, I completely, like, that was that cloud was hovering over this whole show.
Yeah,
And I wasn't into it as much as I probably would have been. And I was excited about this show. We've talked before, 0-1, one of my main companies when I first started watching Japanese wrestling. But when I knew that was the ending of it, it's like I couldn't get into any of these matches as much as I wanted to.
Yeah, that's tragic. So, yeah. nothing more to say right now as we're recording. As I said, hopes and prayers go out to Shinjiro Otani. And I want to add one more thing. The outpour of love for Otani online has been really great and heartwarming to see that so many fans and wrestlers came out to say what a huge inspiration Shinjiro Otani was for them, for their fandom, and for their wrestling. So this guy has an incredible legacy, and I don't know if he really knows about it. Sometimes Japanese wrestlers are completely caught off guard with how respected they are in the Western world, and Shinjiro Otani surely is one of them.
And I hope he does know that, and if hopefully he can learn even more, because like you said, from all the corners of the wrestling world, and especially obviously with American pro wrestling, a lot of people have love for Otani and great fond memories of his wrestling. And he's, whatever happens, he's an all-time wrestler and somebody that a lot of people love and respect. And like you said, that is the one good thing about all of this, is that everybody could go out there and talk about how great Otani was and how much they love him. And hopefully all of our spirits and strength can, you know, help this some small way for him.
Yes, exactly. So now that we have this out of the way, I wanted to start with this because, of course, that's the really heavy part of this show. But I want to turn the corner here because, as you said, we are all fired up for pro wrestling, and there is a lot of pro wrestling going on in Japan in the coming weeks. We're going to talk about some cards, some matches that are lined up for upcoming big shows. Mostly, actually, in Yokohama. Most of these big shows take place in Yokohama. So this is maybe the Yokohama lariat. I don't know. First, I want to go to Big Japan Pro Wrestling. Since on this 0-1 card, you had Daisuke Sekimoto, Yuji Kobayashi teaming. They teamed with Daichi Hashimoto, who, by the way, Dylan, did you see the photo that Fugofugo Yumeji posted on Twitter? He posted a photo of young Daichi Hashimoto in 2002 with Yumeji, and then a photo with him nowadays. That was really sweet.
That's one of the cool things about shows like this, is you have all the memories of not just the show itself, but the company itself over all of these years. And that's one of the ones, you know, Daichi started out in 0-1, looked like he was going to be the ace of the promotion for a long time. I remember being such a big fan of him when he first came in. Unfortunately, it didn't turn out that way, but he made his own way and is in Big Japan now and you know, was able to have that moment. And that's a really cool thing. I advise everybody to go check that out. That picture, at least.
Yes. So Sekimoto and Okabayashi teamed on this card, but on most of the Big Japan cards in these weeks, they are opponents because they will face off at the May 5 show in Yokohama for the Big Japan Strong World Heavyweight Championship. And also on that show on May 5, there will be a junior heavyweight title match, but that is not decided yet. It probably will be Kosuke Sato challenging Kota Sekifuda for the Big Japan Junior Heavyweight title. And as of right now, actually those are the only two matches that are known for this big Yokohama show, which is kind of crazy to think about that they didn't announce any more matches. They announced that Drew Parker will be challenging for the Deathmatch Heavyweight Championship. And weirdly enough, Big Japan has this Kirkenhall show on Thursday, this coming Thursday, where the main event is Yuko Miyamoto and Abdullah Kobayashi against Hideyoshi Kamitani and Drew Parker. And then they go up to Hokkaido, where the actual title match will be happening. So not in Korakuen, but in Hokkaido, where Yuko Miyamoto defends against Hideyoshi Kamitani. And the winner of that match will then face Drew Parker at the show in May that is actually titled Big Japan Welcome Back. So they are running Yokohama Budokan, and they are running with the biggest strong title match they could possibly have. And then they have a match for the Deathmatch Heavyweight title between Miyamoto and Drew Parker, where I don't know what to expect from that, how well that match will draw. It's certainly sounds like a big test for Big Japan to run a big venue like that.
Well, you know, they, like you said, they're putting the big guns out there. with Sekimoto and Okabayashi. That's a legacy match, you know, for Big Japan. That's always their go-to, and they're bringing it back out again now for this May 5th show. And they're, you know, like you said, Drew coming in is interesting. He's a guy I really always wonder is, like, will he ever be in America or will he stay in Japan? It's like, you know, it feels like
something happened. Like he had this goodbye match in January, I think, early January. He was supposed to leave, but never left. So something happened there.
He just, you know, I don't know. I have no idea what's going on. But regardless, that should be a good match. Those are two of the better, you know, deathmatch guys they have, and very popular, obviously, Parker, with everything he's going on. I'm personally a big fan of Sato. I think he's, like, one of my favorite people in all of Big Japan, honestly, just to watch. He's the guy that really makes all of his matches feel important and special, and I think that's kind of hard in Big Japan with a lot of their guys. Even those that are great workers, I think they've kind of struggled lately. And it's, hopefully this show, if nothing else, hopefully they... It gives these guys something to aspire to and really put their best foot forward in. And you know that they can have some bangers, you know, with these guys. Okabayashi is one of the best in the world. We all know that. I think the junior match is going to really catch some people off guard. If you're not as familiar with Sato and Sekifuda, I think Sekifuda is a good talent as well.
He's great.
Yeah. Like I said, I really like him as well. So I think that's going to be a heck of a match. That's like a potential show stealer to me, even over the main event, which is a great match for Big Japan. They have to prove something to me, because we've seen this match so many times.
Yeah.
And the last matches haven't actually been that great between them. So I hope that we can see them really bring out... This is their chance, you know. Like I said, for this big show, the one good thing about it is this is their chance. They know this isn't some random, you know, Cork and Hall show that's not doing well. This is going to be a big match for them. Even if the show doesn't draw well by standards, like the Yokohama standards, just like that 0-1 show, and even if it doesn't draw by their standards, it's big for them. So if they can bring their best foot forward, that can kind of kick things into another gear for the whole promotion. And I think if they can get some momentum from this show, that can lead to great things in the future for them. And some, you know, hopefully they can pull it out. And they have every intention, I'm sure, to put on a heck of a show.
You know, Daisuke Sekimoto has been wrestling for 22 years. He has always been going very hard. People probably don't know that, but at the beginning of his career, he used to do death matches too.
Yep, I remember.
And then he transitioned to become the founding father of the Strong Division in Big Japan Pro Wrestling. He is 41 years old now, and you can see that he has been going hard in the last couple of years, and he's not been able to bring that across, that fire across. That fire is still there, but he's just not the same that he used to be 5 or 6 years ago. And Dylan, you and I, we had a similar discussion about Tomohiro Ishii in our DMs about Ishii's WrestleMania weekend, where the matches, of course, were all fine to good, but you just expect different matches from Tomohiro Ishii. But in very similar fashion, I guess, for Tomohiro Ishii, we've seen his heights, and he's not going to be able to climb back to these high levels of matches that he used to have. And especially because his style is very clear. He has this one style that he always goes with, and that's just him. And people expect that, but he probably is not able to do that much that he was able to do 10 years ago, which is only natural. And I guess the same goes for Daisuke Sekimoto. So this will probably one of the last occasions where they will be able to have a real big main event match with Sekimoto.
You know, the thing with Ishii is I'm not quite ready to write him off yet. I just thought that the match with Thatcher was not nearly as good as it could have been to say that. But I thought the match with Edwards was good. All of his matches were good. I think that's the great thing about Ishii is his floor is high. You know,
yes.
The ceiling is not as maybe as high. But then again, the same thing, you know, because this is something we said about Ishikawa, too. We'll talk about him later in All Japan.
Right.
And he's having I don't know where this came from, but the last 6 months, he's suddenly had this resurgence. Ishii's had some big matches before. You know, like I said, I haven't loved him as much lately as I used to, but Sekimoto himself even had that big match with Nomura in October, I thought was a tremendous match. So that the Sekimoto of 5-6 years ago, you're totally right. That's not him anymore. But if he could dig deep every few, you know, just a couple of times a year, we could see that big Sekimoto. Because, you know, I know you agree with me on this. He used to be one of my favorites. He was like Ken's OG favorite Japanese wrestler. When he saw Sekimoto, was watching those 0-1 shows with me, he's like, who is this guy? And I was like, oh, he's Sekimoto. He's awesome. He's like, oh, I love this dude. Him and Kenta, those were Ken's two favorites when we were watching early wrestling. But I love Sekimoto. He's a beast. But right now, he's not where he was at the end of the day. But still, you know, it's not to disparage him. Like you said, this guy's been going hard for 20 years. And the thing is, these guys, him and Okabayashi, they're, like a lot of people, I think, view them as like brothers, almost. And they're of similar ages. But the thing is, Sekimoto's been wrestling like 10 years longer than Okabayashi, because Okabayashi started in like late 2000s, you know, and Sekimoto started late 90s, you know, 99 or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, there's so much more on Sekimoto's plate than there is Okabayashi, even though they're of similar age. Sekimoto has those extra experiences, like you said, with a death match and everything, too. He even worked one a few years ago when they had – that was a very fun death match he had against Ito.
Yeah, it was both guys' 20th anniversary show.
Yeah. They had the death match. He came out with the jean shorts, too. Very interesting. Ken, I think that's the only death match, because Ken hates death matches, but he watched that one because Sekimoto was in it on there. And he came up with the idea. He wanted Sekimoto to do a big swing into all the light tubes that were around the ring. And I was like, they're not going to do that. Mm-hmm. But he was like, that's what I would do. And I was like, shut up. But anyway, Sekimoto, great worker. But like you said, this is one of those times I hope he digs deep, just like the Nomura match in October. It can bring that old Sekimoto and relive one of their old, you know, they had, you know, at the Big Japan's first show in Sumo Hall was main evented by these guys. We were talking about the 0-1 Sumo Hall show.
Yeah, and that probably is one of those matches that people always think about when with these two. And that is very high ceiling, as you just put it.
Yeah.
You know, you can only catch lightning in a bottle so often with a match like this. So yeah. I'm looking forward to the match, but it's going to be hard to reproduce these moments.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's more like the circumstances surrounding it add to it more than that. Like, because if this was just like a random Corkin Hall title defense, I'd be like, oh, okay. You know, I'm sure it'll be fine, but it's not anything I'm jumping for joy about. But if they can find some extra meaning to it for this May 5th show, and Okabayashi had a banger. Hey, him and Hideki, one of the best Big Japan matches ever, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
That was on May 5th, 5 years ago.
Right.
So hopefully that May 5th magic. Ah. Right now, Cinco de Mayo, that magic that Okabayashi can bring out here. This could be a banger. I'm somewhat interested in this show. Like I said, we know my problems with Big Japan recently, but you know they've had some interesting matches, and this show is something that I'm looking forward to at least.
Let's see, Kids Day magic, because May 5th was Kids Day in Japan, one of those public holidays in Golden Week.
Too. Hold on, yeah, yes. Yeah.
We'll see how that goes. So that is Big Japan Pro Wrestling. There is another show.
Wait, I just wanted to say before, are we going to talk about the match that happened on March 30th that just aired with Nakanoe and Okabayashi?
Oh, I've not seen that match yet. But have you?
Oh, okay. Yes, it was great.
Okay.
It was everything you want out of these two big guys. Like I said, you know, I remember me and Rob, we always do this show on the Patreon for the top five matches a month. And he was saying some Big Japan matches on February, and I wasn't really feeling them that much. But then we got to this match, the final match with Nakanoe and Sekimoto in the tournament. And I was like, man, that was a great match there. And then this one, I thought, was just as great. Nakanoe and Okabayashi, man, he just doesn't miss. It doesn't matter. You could put him in the freaking dump and have a match in there. Like one of those old WCW, remember that match when they wrestled in the dump or whatever? That hardcore title deal? I don't know.
The first match for the hardcore title with the cars lined up, right?
Yeah. If Okabayashi was in that match, that would be a match. Candidate somehow. He could beat the hell out of Glacier.
Yeah, him and Fit Finley, let's go.
Yes, yeah, but you can put him at any point in time. You can put him against Pat O'Connor 60 yes. years ago, and this guy would be having bangers.
Yeah, Okabayashi would probably invent the O'Connor role.
Well, he would steal it from O'Connor, obviously, and pass it on to his disciple in this alternate timeline of Sekimoto to do the Chaos Theory style dead end that he does sometimes. But yes, any time period, you put him in DDT, you put him in All Japan, you can put him in Noah, you can put him anywhere, and Okabayashi just doesn't miss. And Nakanoe's been very, I don't know what's gotten to him lately, but he seems like he's very inspired lately as well.
Haven't I always been telling you that the guy's good?
Yeah, but his title reign it was not as inspiring as he's been lately.
That's true. Even though last year he had great matches with Takuya Nomura and Yuya Aoki.
Yeah, those were good matches. And the Okabayashi match where he won was really great.
Yes.
He's a good wrestler. I didn't love him as... So that's the thing. I think you say whenever I say somebody shouldn't be world champion that I don't like him. But I like him. I like Nakanoe, and he's great here. So hopefully he has something good on that show as well. But yeah, everybody watch that match if you can, the March 30th Nakanoe and Okabayashi match.
Great. Hey, I'll be checking that out once I get the chance to.
You'll love
it. So from Big Japan Pro Wrestling, we're going to go to another promotion that is going to run Yokohama Budokan. It's Ice Ribbon, and basically I just want to talk about them because there is one match in particular that is going to be headlining that show, and we've talked about that before. It's going to be Tsukushi's retirement match. She's, of course, still the Ice X Infinity champion, and she's going to defend the championship against Asai in a match that, I don't know, I haven't seen that coming, that she's going to defend against Asai. I would have assumed that she defends it against some of the more veteran wrestlers on the roster, like, for example, Fujimoto. But no, it's going to be Asai. And for the Triangle Ribbon Championship, champion Yuki Mashiro defends against Makoto and Rina Yamashita. And that is basically all we know for that card. And I guess we will only know more for this show after their upcoming Currican Hall show, which is on April 30, so there's only going to be a few days between this and the Yokohama Budokan show. And on that Currican Hall show on April 30, they only announced one match either for that one. It's Tsukasa Fujimoto versus Arisa Nakajima. Maybe you don't need to announce more matches for this one. But yeah, it's a very shallow card right now, and it's not even 1 month left until this show. So that's Yokohama Budokan.
Yeah, you know, they're in a crazy spot right now with so many changes comings and goings. First of all, shout out Gacha King, Yuki Mashiro, very fun talent to all the Ice Ribbon fans out there. That should be a fun match. I think, if anything, you know, with how things are looking for Ice Ribbon, I would have wanted, someone like Ibuki Hoshi to be put over. If you're going to pass the torch, that type of deal, if you remember... I'm pretty sure you do remember, and maybe some other people do as well. A few years ago, there was this big Risa Sera title reign, and mm-hmm. I was like a huge defender of that too. They were doing really good business. That was like one of their highest points of the past decade. And she was, I've always liked Risa Sera. I'm not going to say she was like the greatest wrestler or anything, but she was a good worker, a little underrated in my opinion. But they basically ended her title reign by going to like Hiragi Karumi. And that's what I would like to see here. That didn't really pan out because, like, 3 months later, she lost to Miyako Matsumoto, which was a great match and a huge pop, and I still remember it to this day. But I would love if they did something kind of similar and kind of passed the torch to Hoshi in the future. Because she, to me, is, like, the top star in waiting of Ice Ribbon.
She's not only the top star, she's also incredibly good inside the ring. She's 18 years old, been wrestling for 4 years. This match she had with Tsukasa Fujimoto last year was incredible, and then also she had the title match against Tsukushi earlier this year, so they're really putting her out there in some situations. She has won the tag team title with her mother, which is pairing. I always like that when they appear together and her mom gives her the championship and says, ah, come on, wear this.
Yeah, they're so different too, Hamako and Ibuki. But yes, they're great pairing as well. I love them a lot. But yeah, Tsukushi, she's been pretty busy. She had like 2 title defenses in like a week span last month. She defended against Saki and Totoro Satsuki, which was a very, very fun deal there. I really enjoyed that Totoro match as well. I thought that was a very good going in there. But Tsukushi's a great worker. All of her matches are worth watching at the end of the day. And so will this one be against Asahi. But hopefully they have something big in mind for the future of the title and the promotion. And they remember when they were talking about Fujimoto going on her, not excursion, but her break for her wedding and stuff. She mentioned that they have something planned that nobody's going to believe, and it's going to be super cool. And hopefully they have something. Yeah, I'm paraphrasing. They didn't actually say it like that. But still, that was the gist of it. I hope that they have something that we can see glimpses of that in the near future, specifically for the show.
Yes. So that is as much as we can say about Ice Ribbon and their batches in Yokohama and coming up there. In the world of Stardom, Dylan, the Cinderella tournament is going on right now. They had the first round on April 3rd with 16 matches, and we are now up to the second round. The second round has started with Hazuki defeating Asumi, and Shuri and Himika going to a time limit draw, which means both are eliminated. And the other second round matches will be happening this coming weekend with Saya Ida against Mai Sakurai, Unagi Sayaka against Natsupoi, Mayu Iwatani against Sakikashima, and Julia versus Koguma. And then the quarterfinals are on that show as well, with the final. When is actually the final going to happen? Is the final on the same day? No. There is another show, right?
I think it's like the 29th. I have the graphic on here somewhere. Okay. I had it on there. Let's
take out the graphic because I don't find it on Perlov right now. So
yes, they did announce this. It's not something we made up. Let's see. This is very difficult.
It actually is the 29th, yes.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I just wanted to make sure. It's good that my memory is not completely shot.
So they have the third round matches on that show, the semifinals, and of course the finals on April 29th, and then they will go on to their shows in May. But first of all, Dylan, the Cinderella tournament, how has it been so far?
Yeah, I watched the whole first round show, which they did have a second round match on there too, just to eliminate some extra people on that first show because they went to a draw. Yeah, the thing with the tournament here, you got to understand when you watch it, this is like the perfect, like if you're new to Stardom, this is like the best possible stepping point to it, because all of the matches, the rules of the tournament are the 10-minute time limit. So if it goes to 10 minutes, both people are eliminated. And that gives you a bit of a snapshot of the promotion in a lot of ways. You know you're not going to get the epics. You're not going to see the great, great matches, but it's more so you can look at the wrestlers themselves and the characters on there that they show. And they did a lot there. One of my favorite matches was Azumi versus Momo Watanabe. Like, this was a 3-minute match, and it was like they wrestled 3 matches in one. There were multiple storylines in there. They had the factions warring. You know, they had a huge brawl with Queen's Quest and Oedo Tai. You had the wrench gimmick, which had been a thing since the start of the year, since Momo's heel turn, and Azumi finally getting her win over Momo after all the times Momo beat her. They told all kinds of stories. There was great action. There was excitement. It was just a great 3-minute match, and you learned so much about the characters from that one match, but they kept a lot of the matches short. Yeah, you had the high-speed match like Natsupoi and Starlight. I was very surprised by that. That's the thing. When I looked at this first-round booking, I was so surprised because Tom Nakano and Starlight Kid, to me, were the two favorites, and they eliminated them right away. And I think a lot of people would probably agree with that. Tom, Utami, Starlight, and Micah were all eliminated on the first show, pretty much. So it's like, who the hell's going to win this tournament? It's kind of where I was at by the end of it. And now, you know, the big thing, too, they started this new faction for Shuri, God's Eye, great name on there. They do Undisputed Era's like hand signal as well. Kind of on there, too. That's like their thing. But yeah, Shuri, a great faction leader, and her match with Ami Sorei was so inspiring to Mirai. She was like, I got to drop Donna Del Mondo. I'm joining your group now. And and it makes sense too, because Mirai, she had her first match with Shuri. They built this up really well, and that's the thing I like too. They have a lot of good confluent storylines where they're like stuff builds upon each other. Julia and Tekla, too, they played off their history in Ice Ribbon. They had a great match on the first show. So everything went well. It's an interesting tournament. I really like what I saw from it, in fact, to be honest with you. Now, so most of the matches aren't going to like light the world on fire, but even a match like Iwatani and Kogo, I thought was great because it showed you, like, the match itself wasn't great, but it showed you how great Iwatani was because she got the most she possibly could out of Momo Kogo without also losing anything herself. And that's something I mentioned on my Patreon review. It's a very fine line. You have to be super talented to do this. When you're working a match, when you're like a top tier person and you're facing a bottom tier person, not in terms of talent, but just in terms of your spot on the card, you have to walk a fine line of not eating them up and ruining them and making them look bad, but also not selling too much to where it's unbelievable to the fans. Like, oh, why is this guy able to fight this dude? And, you know, it's a problem I had. And shout out to our boy, Wheeler Yuta, friend of the show, Brother Utes. Great talent doing his big match versus John Moxley in the Rampage Friday. But
yeah,
that was a great match there. My problem was it wasn't the talent. I just wish they had gone to that storyline a lot better, because it's like a month ago, this guy was getting squashed by John Moxley.
Yeah, right.
And now he's like putting him in this epic match. And it's like that stuff that would take years in Japanese wrestling to get to it. And obviously, we don't have that. In that situation, they don't have the luxury of that on an American TV show. But it still could have been built a lot better than like, oh, suddenly now he's ready after we just showed him getting squashed. Here was like a way better example. And like that match was way better than the Momo Kogo and Iwatani match, obviously, but just in terms of how they built it was so effective, I thought. It showed the greatness of Iwatani that she was able to walk that line. So you got hints of pretty much everybody on the card. Nothing was terrible or anything like that. It was all pretty good, and they're setting up something interesting. I have no idea who's winning this tournament after this first line. Now, they only, because Julia just challenged, so I don't think it would make sense for her to win, even though she's the biggest star left. Maybe Hazuki, that she's eliminated Azumi. That's something you could go to. Natsupoi, after eliminating Starlight Kid, if they want to give her a little bit of a bump up, could be good. I'm into both of those. Those are probably the two favorites, in my opinion. But like I said, they swerved me a little with this first round, but I'm into it. And hopefully they do some good things in the future. I think after the World Climax shows at the end of March, I know you haven't seen those yet, but I think after those shows, Stardom's on a big roll right now. And with Shuri as champion, I think that things, the sky's the limit going forward. And another thing, too, I want to mention one more thing. That first show, I loved the production values of it. And particularly the opening was one of the best like tournament openings I could ever remember. Like, basically, they had everybody on the stage. The show starts off with them ringing the bell, like very ominously. The lights go out, and they have like this big curtain on the stage, right? And they drop the curtain, and all of the competitors of the tournament are on the stage, and they're doing their signature pose. It was awesome. And then they basically walk the champions to the ring, and I thought that was super cool, because then you had like someone like Hanan is in the ring with her title, but Julia and Tom Nakano and, you know, Mayu are on the outside. So it gave spotlight to everybody, whether it was Shuri, Hanan, Azumi. Like, they all had their titles in the fireworks shot. It was a great, great opening to the tournament. Just watch that, if nothing else.
Yeah, you know, when you watch these big Stardom shows in recent months, the production quality is definitely through the roof ever since they were taken over by Bushiroad. That is a very important thing, I think, for this group to not only present itself as the best Yoshi wrestling company for the wrestling part, but also for the presentation part. And I do think that is a huge part of why they've become so popular.
Yeah, you can see how successful they've been. Just look at them and their Sumo Hall shows, like good attendance for them at the end of March. And it looks like it's going to continue. Like I said, with the Cinderella tournament going in there, and they can wrestle too. About them, is a good thing about Stardom is that they can kind of, they can go different places. It's not just Tokyo. They can go to different parts of the country and do good in each place. They're like a little bit more of an uptick than where they were before the Bushiroad stuff. So yeah, I definitely think they're on a roll. Great company for wrestling, but also production values and things like that as well. And like I said, they've got an interesting little deal going with this tournament too. I wonder who's going to win. I kind of gave my two the ways I'm leaning, but don't take that for as gospel by any means. I think anybody could really come out ahead. So very much looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm kind of looking at the winner between... it's really, really difficult. I don't know.
Yeah.
Either
because,
rest, either
yeah,
rest
Ma-
a rip win.
Yeah, Mayu and Julia just had their title shots too, so it wouldn't make a lot of sense for them to win. They're the two biggest stars left.
Let's see about that. Definitely, as you said, they are on a roll and they are going to different cities. They are having some shows here. They are going to Fukuyama, Nagasaki, Kumamoto. Then they have a big show in the Fukuoka Kokusai Center on Children's Day, once again, with two matches lined up as we are talking. SWA title Tekla defense against Mayu Iwatani in Mayu Iwatani's quest to win all the Stardom championships. And the Wanderer of Stardom title is on the line, Saya Kamitani defense against Maika. That is the big show that they have going on. And then there is an ex-Dylan in Shuri's new group. Who is X going to be?
Who will it be? Another mystery person. A new person coming into Stardom. And whoever it is. You know, so the thing with Ami Soray, who turned out to be her bodyguard, which I don't really love the wording of that. You know, at the end of the day, you can call her an associate, a hit woman, whatever you want to call her. Bodyguard feels to me like that's something like a heel would have, you know?
And isn't she like 5'7"?
Yes, and she's very powerful, as we saw in the opening, the tournament match that she had. That whole match was Shuri leading the match, and occasionally Soray would pop up with a power spot, you know?
I see.
So Soray, a good power person to have, but still, I just don't like the idea of Shuri having a bodyguard. She seems like she doesn't need a bodyguard, you know what I'm saying? A super badass type of person. But regardless, whoever this ex is, it's probably going to be somebody from Actress Girls again.
Probably.
Based on recent hirings, that's what that tells us. But who knows? Like, it could literally be anybody at this point, I feel like, depending on, you know, if there's anybody, you know, who leaves a company within the next week or so, that could be somebody we could look at. But, you know, it'll probably be somebody good, at least, or at the very least, somebody good or young. And the whole point of this faction, you have Mirai, Ami Soray, and Shuri. They're all kind of like have real wrestling backgrounds, you know, shooter type of background type of deal there. And they're trying to, and Soray, she was more like a power wrestler than a shooter, but she fills her role in the faction. So you each have a different role. I think it's going to be another like that type of player, like Mirai and Shuri.
All right. So much for Stardom, I would say.
I won't give up in Hikaru Shida.
Well, maybe. Who knows? Maybe she is.
I would refuse to let this go.
She'll definitely be on the Yokohama card for Ice Ribbon the day before. The big show of Stardom.
That's true. Well, that's probably not going to happen in that case, but still.
In that case, it can happen because X is also announced for the Kumamoto show. That is on the exact same day as the Ice Ribbon show. So Hikaru Shida is out.
Yes, she's eliminated. Although I'm very happy that she's wrestling Ice Ribbon again. I much prefer that than her being in Stardom. But still, hopefully X is somebody good. I have no idea who it could be, to be honest with you.
That's the fun of Stardom with all their X's. All right, so Tokyo Yoshi Pro Wrestling once again had a show in Kuroken Hall. It was still incomplete 2022. And I thought the show was solid. I didn't think that anything necessarily stood out like we had in recent months with Tokiyoshi Pro Wrestling. I thought it was a very solid show with a good main event between Shoko Nakajima and Yuki Aino. And in the semi-main, we had a Princess Tag Team title match. Daisy Monkey, as they are known now, Arisu Endo and Suzumoe, they had a very good performance against the Magical Sugar Rabbits. So once more, I thought that the Princess Tag Team title match probably was the best match of the show. We saw the birth of a new tag team between Saki Akai and Yuki Arai, who won their match against Mahiro Kiryu and Rika Tatsumi. Also very good stuff. And then we had a new number one contender crowned. After Hyper Misao defeated Zanshiro Takagi at the big show in March, she now also defeated Mio Watanabe and challenged Shoko Nakajima for the Princess of Princess Championship afterwards. There's some other stuff on this card. Free Wi-Fi, another tag team name. Hikari Noah and Nao Kakuta defeated Maki Ito and Yuki Kamifuku, which allowed them to challenge for the Princess Tag Team title next. And then we had Marika Kobashi defeating Raku. and Mio Yamashita defeating Yuriya Nagano in a match that only lasted 4 minutes. But the way that Nagano approached this match once again proved that she will be a big star down the line. When she did her karate pose and with her mean look trying to match Mio Yamashita's mean look, Yuriya Nagano, she had everybody in for a great ride, and I think that she'll be gaining a lot more fans as she goes on.
Oh, absolutely. That's inarguable, in my opinion, that she is going to continue more than her gaining fans. I think she's going to help the entire company. You know, I think she's going to make everything high tide raises all boats, they say. I think Nagano's raising the tide of Tokyo Joshi Pro right now. And great. Like, she's going to grow into being something special, I think, as a wrestler. And what a great idea to put her against Miyu so early. It shows you what they think of her to put her in that kind of position to have a singles match with her right away. And yeah, that was awesome. I watched the whole show as well. I love the team. You see, you mentioned free Wi-Fi at the team of Noah and now Kakuta, which, great name, no doubt. But we also have to mention the Arisu Endo and Suzume team, Daisy Monkey, as well. Two wonderful tag team names, I would say there. So we have to mention that. And they set up Hyper Misao going for the title against Shoko on the next show next month. So that was interesting. A lot of interesting things going on there. Yeah, I like the tag match the best. The tag titles. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what's going on with the tag titles, but I gotta say, I was showing...
Well, the Magical Tumorites are going on with the tag titles.
That's true. You're completely right about that. I was just gonna say, too, I was showing Tokyo Joshi Pro to somebody who had never watched it before. And really never even watched wrestling. I don't know how Tokyo Joshi Pro became our into this. But she is super impressed with Sakazaki and everything. Sakazaki and Yuki Arai were the ones that stood out to her. We were watching the big show in March at the Sumo Hall, and she was just in love with them. The main event was great, too. It shows you there's a lot for everybody on Tokyo Joshi Pro, and, you know, they're just moving forward in great ways, and it seems like I like that. I obviously, just me personally, Dylan, as a fan, I love Miyu Yamashita and want to watch her as champion and have all these great matches, but they seem to specifically kind of change course a little bit with Shoko as champion, doing this Aino defense, which is very character driven because obviously Nodoka Tenma retired, so this was like a very emotional type of match for her to get a title shot. And now Hyper Misao, a very significantly more character based match, I would say, and a little bit of a rivalry between Shoko and her as well. So they're doing things a little different.
This definitely, Dylan, this is the match between the big monster kaiju and our hero. So they are going to play that off, that match, I guess.
Oh, that's true. Will there be, the thing is, they totally missed the boat of having a gimmick change after their January 4th match. They didn't do anything with that. And then, yes. They made a big mistake on that, but unfortunately that did not happen. But yeah, great stuff there, and very timely as well after the the amazing and mind-boggling return of Stone Cold. We saw Hyper Misao hit her own stunner in the show. Stone Cold Misao has now come to Tokyo Joshi Pro.
Yes, Chris Brooks specifically mentioned in commentary that he has only seen that part of WrestleMania and nothing else. So shout out to Chris.
Well, that was the best part, to be honest with you. But besides Bianca winning the title, shout out Tennessee. That was something Madball really loved too about WrestleMania. When all the Tennessee people won. Johnny Knoxville and Bianca, Johnny Knoxville. What a wrestling name to bring up in 2022. But yeah, like I said, the MVPs of WrestleMania: Stone Cold, Cody Rhodes, and Johnny Knoxville. So who would have said that a year ago?
The Musketeers of WrestleMania.
Oh, yes, absolutely. But yes, Misao, very... even Brooks shouting out WrestleMania here with Stone Cold Steve Austin. Now he has passed the torch. That may be very well be his last match, truly. And now a new person has arrived to carry the torch that he dropped from Misao.
Also, don't want to undermine here the opening match, Moka Miyamoto and Poma Ojuku. Oh, yeah. Another good pairing here, a good tag team between the two. They are getting better. I think Pom especially is getting better. She's been wrestling longer than Moka Miyamoto, but recently I really liked her performances. Moka Miyamoto also getting better, of course. They defeated Haruna Neko and Kaya Toribami. And since we are here on the way of naming all the tag teams, I said that Saki Akai and Yuki Arai now formed a tag team. They are going to be known as Reiwa no AA Ho, which translates to Reiwa's AA Cannon, the guns of the Reiwa era.
Somewhat similar to the BY Ho team. So, I mean, who better to represent them than Saki Akai and Yuki Arai?
Very natural. Yes, so that is still incomplete, and then going to...
Which, to be fair, was completed. So it's not incomplete anymore.
Yeah, I sometimes wonder about the show name of this card, because it was completed. So going to the show on May 3, it is... I think it's from Kurken, is it? It's from Kurken. The card as it stands right now. Yes, Wonderland 2022, spread the wings of your dreams. We have a match for the Princess Tag Team title, Yuka Sakazaki and Mizuki against Hikari Noah at Nao Kakuta. Fan of Nao Kakuta getting a push in TJPW now. After last year, she has basically only been in mid-card matches. And the Princess of Princess Championship, as mentioned, the big Kaiju Shoko Nakajima against Hyper Misao in her second defense of the belt. And, well, everything else is still up in the air.
Every single match we've covered, that is announced. But, it should be fun. It's probably not going to be one of those, like, match of the year shows or anything like that, but it's going to be fun to watch, so I like it.
I like it as well. I want to go to the brother promotion of TJPW. They are running their April Fool tour right now, which was, I think, was it completed? There may be more shows in that tour, but definitely they had a Kurken Hall show that was main evented by Konosuke Takeshita's final DDT match for now, as he is going to go to America to wrestle for All Elite Wrestling. And it was also Tetsuya Endo's 10th anniversary match. So they had Burning, Jun Akiyama and Tetsuya Endo teaming with Yukio Sakaguchi to take on Antonio Honda, Harashima and Konosuke Takeshita. And we saw very great callbacks with Takeshita and Honda. And Takeshita also after the show said that Honda and Harashima are his favorite senpais in pro wrestling. Of course, going back to their stable, Antonio Honda and Konosuke Takeshita had their Happy Motel stable, and they did some of the stuff that they used to do when they were in Happy Motel together. We had some callbacks to Takeshita and Endo, of course, as well. So this was a very good main event, I thought, to a Kurken Hall show that was overall okay. I really liked the KOD tag team title match because I'm heavily into the tag team of Yuji Hino and Yuki Onaya. I think that Hino is lifting up Yuki Onaya. You can really see how he's improving alongside Yuki Onaya. Yeah, otherwise, the semi-main event was very good with Mao and Yuki Ueno against Eruption, Hideki Okatani and Katsu Sada Higuchi. So overall, solid, I thought, a solid Kurken for DDT.
And Okada won!
And Okada won! Yes, setting up a tag team title match for him.
Yes, beating Shunma as well. How about that? My man Okada representing here. There's many Okadas in wrestling, and he's probably my favorite.
Yes. Yeah, it's crazy how it goes. Not even being on the main shows now to challenging for the tag team title, the big show in Yokohama.
It's the Yokohama magic is in the air.
Once again.
Yes, for Okada there. Yeah, we saw Kanon make his debut for DDT as well.
Very good debut.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a great signing. I love seeing the JTO guys get some shine, and the women too. We saw Tomoka Inaba and Great recently as well. So JTO getting some love here. And I think, yeah, that's a really good... if they can keep using him and do some good things, I think that's a great thing for DDT.
I mean, he completely has the look that DDT is going for. He heavily reminds me of a young Kota Ibushi just from the looks. The wrestling is different. He has great presence inside the ring. He had a good match with Yuki Ishida. And yeah, he'll be a star, definitely. You can already see it.
Yeah, he's got solid size to him as well. There compared to a lot of the DDT roster. Maybe he could beat up Nat Mao and be like, I'm the new Ibushi, not like...
Yes. Maybe he can free Mao from the Ibushi comparisons.
Yes. It's, now that you've put this curse upon Kanon, now... it was all you, Striga. It was all you.
So let's look at the Yokohama card they have coming up. That is Mega Max Bump in Yokohama on May the 1st. In the opening matches, they are announced as dark matches, but of course they will be shown. First match is Kanon against Yuya Koroku. Then we have Toru Washi and Naomi Yoshimura against Antonio Honda and Yuki Ishida. Shinya Aoki wrestles Toi Kojima. That is a great chance for young Toi Kojima.
Yeah, I'm all for this. Shinya Aoki, always have him wrestle these young guys. I think that's a great idea. It gives them a different style to combat.
Saki Akai and Hideki Okatani wrestle Maya Yuki and Shuna Katsumata in a tag team match. On different sides again, after they shook hands after their singles match, Saki Akai and Maya Yuki. That's okay. You can wrestle each other.
The feud will never end.
No, never. Well, you know also what's never going to end is Damnation. They're still going. Daisuke Sasaki, MJ Paul, and X. They are wrestling Yuji Hino, Yuki Onaya, and Soma Takao. Dylan, will this be the same or a different X than on Stardom's cards?
I think it's the same one. I think we both know who it is, and there's no question. When you look at the facts, and this is just me, if you throw it out there, if you look at the facts, this person is unquestionably the same person. I think you know exactly who I'm talking about.
Johnny Knoxville.
Buff Bagwell.
It's good too.
It's definitely one of the two. I would say your guess is good as well, but I don't see that. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he'll prove me wrong. Maybe. But those are the only explanations that could happen.
You know who would fit perfectly with Damnation? Actually, now that we're talking about Buff Bagwell, I was thinking about Attitude Era guys. Gangrel would be great.
Oh, yes, I think Edge is adopting his gimmick in WWE right now, if you want a dark black and purple aesthetic type of person. But yes, Gangrel, you want a vampire in there? Sure, why not?
Special sick... Oh, sorry?
I was going to say, I don't know if you want to let Sasaki around him. I know Gangrel has a history in the porn industry since his retirement.
And
so
he's also a good trainer.
Yes, very, very much so. Nothing but respect for Gangrel.
Special six-man tag team match. Pheromones against Imabayashi GM final match. The feud that I was thinking that would never come to an end because the matches have been the same all over again. But apparently it's now coming to a closure. Since Akira came to the aid of GM Hisaya Imabayashi, the recent show in Yokohama, he is now teaming with the GM, and the third man on this team is Muscle Sakai, as they face Danshoko Dandy Dino, Yuki Sexy Ino, and Yumehito Fantastic Imanari. Dylan, I know that's going to be your match of the year.
I just wonder, does anything end in DDT? It feels like nothing ends anymore. Everything we talk about just goes on, just like life. Life goes
continues.
On.
Yes, and that is... very accurate, actually.
That's the lesson of DDT. It's not just a wrestling company. People always say comedy wrestling, all this, but in reality, it's ultimately a multi-purpose story on all of our lives.
Wow. Didn't see that coming, actually.
It's deep when you think about it. That's the genius of DDT, the genius of Sanshiro Takagi. He always is thinking deeper than the rest of us.
I want this to end.
Okay. Some people don't agree, but that's just an idea I had.
It specifically says Muscle Sakai. Will he also bring a PowerPoint presentation?
Ooh. That's...
Or is Master Sakai not as technologically advanced as Sasadango Machine is?
You have to ask him that, Striga. You think I know him personally? You think he's told me this himself? How can I answer that, realistically?
I'm just making stuff up because I don't want to talk about this match anymore.
We sure have spent a lot of time talking about this.
Yes,
stupid
that's gone. For no reason. This one. I don't know if I don't know if you've seen the match graphic for it, but when I saw this graphic, I was loving this already, and I will post the Daisuke Sekimoto graphic of I'm Hard for this one special tag match. Harashima and Hikaru Sato face Katsusada Higuchi and Yukio Sakaguchi.
That sounds pretty awesome, to be honest with you. Sato in DDT.
Back in DDT, yeah.
Yeah, after all these years. Like I said, when I first started watching Japanese wrestling, he was like one of the main guys in DDT. Him and Ibushi were having a rivalry on there. But here we are, back again, after all these years. But I guess, you know, we've seen Omori work in DDT a little bit, and now Sato coming in. Maybe All Japan and DDT. You know, the fires of tensions are lowering.
He has been there from time to time. The last match was in 2019. He faced Kota Ueda back then. He had a match in 2017, but this is his first match back in years, really. So this is a big one for him. As you mentioned, he was a longtime DDT guy. Was in the King of DDT 2013, so a long time ago. Transitioned to DDT from DDT to All Japan Pro Wrestling after that, and has been there ever since, of course. And it should also be a great mix of styles with him and Sakaguchi on the one side, and then Harashima and Higuchi on the other side. So this can only be great.
Oh, absolutely. I'm super hyped to see that. That's my kind of match.
Next up, the Kyori 10-man tag team title is on the line. The champion group, Poison, Sawada, Julie, Takashi Sasaki, Gentaro, Mikami, and Tanamosaku Toba, with Naomi Susan, defend against Sanjiro Takagi, Yoshiaki Yatsu, Akito, Katsuki Hirata, and Gorgeous Matsuno. Jesus.
Oh, we talked about Sato. Look at all those names of the 10-man champions.
Yes.
I mean, these guys are... That was way before I even started watching something like Toba. Those guys are like, you know... Early 2000s DDT and Poison Sawada Julie on there. That was a crazy, shocking name. I didn't think that these guys were going to be brought back, but here they are. Like somehow they're doing this again, and perhaps they will bring they'll show these kids how they did comedy wrestling back in their
day. And Yoshiaki Yatsu there too as the grandfather of the tag team. That's going to be interesting because of all the comedy it's going to be brought. That's really core DDT, this one is.
Yeah, this should be like the good kind of DDT comedy, in my opinion. When you hear those names, it's a lot of just outrageous and goofy people that I'll probably end up liking this, to be honest with you. But much more than that pheromones match earlier and all that.
At the top of this card really looks good with the QD tag team title. Chris Brooks and Masahiro Takanashi defend against Jun Akiyama and Yusuke Okada. DDT Universal title, Mao defends against Asuka. And in the main event, QD Openweight title, Tetsuya Endo in his defense against Yuki Ueno.
Love it. Love Ueno getting a title shot. Asuka and Mao, that's going to be a crazy-ass match. A lot of people are going to enjoy all of these matches, I think. And Ueno, I think, can get great things. And Endo is going to really be motivated to put on a big show. And I'm excited to see how it goes. All of those matches seem pretty cool. Like I said, this is a very... This, to me, this whole card that we've read feels like DDT in a nutshell, almost. Because Yeah, because it's like you have the comedy, you have the perverted comedy in some of the other ones. You had... you know, Shinya Aoki randomly in here.
Randomly in the opening match.
Yeah, exactly. Like, makes no sense. Like, probably one of the biggest stars, but in the opening match for no reason. You've got great, exciting, high-flying wrestling in the main event. That's going to be super modern style. Mm-hmm. You've got a really interesting and unique pairing with Mao and Asuka. You know, you've got like power guys in there, high flyers, comedy, technical. You know, old guys, nostalgia coming in there. It's like you really do. And this is something you always say, Strig, that DDT has something for everybody. And I think that this show is like one of the biggest versions of that I can remember in terms of just having something like so many different things on one show.
I always love when Asuka is in a big time situation in DDT because Asuka usually always delivers and has been in one of the most famous DDT matches, actually, because it has gone viral over the last couple of years with this Ippon Leibtube match that she's had against Akito years ago that went onto YouTube and really had a great rating. I'm just looking it up, what rating it has, actually, but I'm not finding it. But lots of people loved it, and I loved it, I know that. It was a great match at the time, and let's see, there's a rating of 8.68 as we're talking right now. And Mao and Asuka should be able to recreate magic.
Sure, I'm sure it'll be a ton of fun. The show just looks like, up and down, there's a lot of fun stuff on this show. And I think they've done a great job really formulating their show for a DDT audience and giving, like you said, giving something for everybody.
Oh, Dragon Gate recently had a very fun show that ended in the retirement of one Kness or Canis. We don't know. Is it Kness? Is it Canis? We are going by Canis. And so Canis retired, due to a series of injuries. He's basically been wrestling with these injuries on and off for the last 10 years. He has had a lot of shoulder issues, a lot of neck injuries. Neck issues in recent years, so he couldn't really wrestle anymore, and now he has wrestled this one more match. All the shows, all the tours had been named after him. It was usually the name of the tour, like Truth Gate, and then Final Burst Out Kness Forever, and this was the name of the tours, and it was mentioned at the beginning of the year that he would retire on April 7, so that happened last week with a tremendous crowd in Currican Hall. Probably the biggest crowd for a wrestling show in this venue since the beginning of the pandemic, with 1,410 people in attendance who came to see Kenneth's retirement match. Dragon Kid and KZ faced off against the Knesuka team, one of my favorite tag teams of all time, Kanis and Susumu Yokosuka, with a running elbow smash from KZ against Kanis. And Kanis really withstood everything that KZ would throw at him. Basically, he could bring out the old kitchen sink. He threw everything at him but the kitchen sink. Lots of elbows, lots of running uppercuts he threw against Kanis. But Kanis just wouldn't go down, and the crowd went crazy for that. So for Kanis, this I think was a very good way to go out in his last match, and it was a very emotional retirement ceremony with so many people coming out, most notably Nanae Takahashi and Yu Takayoshi. Dylan,
Nanae Takahashi should be at every show.
Yes,
I think
she's nowadays appearing in every promotion but Seed Ring.
Yes, except for that one. Conspicuous by her absence. But yes, she's on great, doing stuff here now with Dragon Gate. Why not? And everybody loves Kness, you know? I feel like this is a guy, and I think, long-time listeners and people that know you will know this, but I don't know if everybody knows that, like, Dragon Gate was your bread and butter for a long time. All of their offshoots, Toriyama X, El Dorado, that you told me that was your favorite company.
Oh yeah.
At one point. Yeah. See, people don't know that. We started off with like El Dorado and Battle Arts. Two like with me. Like two very vastly different promotions. But I always enjoyed those shows too. Like anything where Sugi was on under a different gimmick in the mid-2000s, that was your jam, pretty much. And my jam as well. But Kness was, I remember us talking, in the early days of the show, and, it's crazy, I haven't even thought about this, but this, right now, this show is probably like 6 years to the day I came on, or not to the day, but, right, this episode, pretty much, because it was right after WrestleMania 2016 that I showed up here, so 6 years of us doing our thing here, but I remember on those early shows, you were, I think you were, your love of Dragon Gate was waning by the time I showed up.
Gone away at that point in time, but Dragon Gate over the last 2-3 years really has done a great job of reinventing themselves to create a product that is both very modern in their style, but also values the history of Dragon Gate very much so. And really, that has all come together with Ultima Dragon returning.
Yeah, that was a big moment for sure on there. And all of the different people they brought in, I think they've really completed a great roster. And obviously the young talent, too. I think we have to give them credit for really adding lots to the promotion itself. And then they have this, and we saw it last year with the Yoshino retirement. Dragon Gate really goes in when they do their nostalgia trip. I mean, listen, this is a company that did a year-long storyline dedicated to a promotion 20 years ago when Toriyama, when Ultima Dragon came back, they had the three factions, the three eras, the three generations. Dragon Gate, of all the companies, and I think this goes with their influence, and you know, you could probably trace this to Ultimo himself, but I think when I first started watching Dragon Gate, and like compared to any of them, now it's a little different because this is more prevalent, but especially back then, 10 years ago or so, Dragon Gate was the company where you would have, promo segments and stuff after matches. A lot of times they didn't do those nearly as much in the other companies like Noah or New Japan. Dragon Gate really built themselves on catering to emotional aspects of wrestling, history, unit breakups, things like that. That their history seems to matter with every company. I mean, how many times did we see Speed Muscle get back together and break up again throughout history? And K-Des is something you can trace his history all the way back to the, you know, before pre-Dragon Gate days, you know, Darkness Dragon and stuff. That was a legendary match he had with Dragon Kid, you know, all the way to now. I always really respected him as a worker. He was one of my favorites, too. He always stood out to me in his prime as one of the best of the Dragon Gate style at the time. And I thought that they worked the retirement match. It was so cool because they worked it perfectly and put him in the spotlight as well, which I think is something that if you see something in a New Japan, you know, like when Nakanishi went out, they had him in the spotlight by the end, but it was like you put this 8-man tag match together. Everybody was kind of doing the work for him to get to that point. Here, K-Nest was really in the spotlight, especially with Dragon Kid. I thought they really called back on their history. Again, a 20-year history with these guys, and they utilized it to spectacular fashion. I thought it was very emotional. Everything was like great for it, and it showed. I think Dragon Gate is the company that handles retirements the best out of all the promotions.
Very classy, yes. And it's not only that they recalled their own history. Also, Azteca Tadahiro Fujisaki, who we called out here before on the show as Fugo Fugo Yumeji, and Kamikaze from Kana's days in the Wrestle Humor Factory, they came out too. Give Kenneth flowers because he was wrestling there as Makoto Saito.
Kamikaze, that was one of my favorite guys in 01. Like back then too. That was a blast from the past thing.
Crazy, right? Yes, the Wrestle Humor Factory. That's a promotion that ended in 1999 or 1998, even before Toriyamon began. So they went really back here for this retirement ceremony. It was very tearful. The final two speeches were held by, of course, Kanis, one of Kanis' trainers in Ultimo Dragon, and of course his longtime tag team partner, Suzumi Kusuka, who had his tag team partner leave now. And so that was a very emotional moment, as you mentioned. Except for that, on that show,
More thing on that. I just want to shout out one thing real quick. If you want to hear more about K-Ness's history, before we move on, listen to this episode of this show called Open the Voice Gate. Yeah, with Case Lowe and Mike Spears. They had Jay, the commentator for Dragon Gate. He was on their show, and they did a whole thing, like a whole episode based on K-Ness. Like half the episode was K-Ness, and half of it was like all kinds of other interesting stuff that you might be into if you're a fan of other promotions. But for the K-Ness history, listen to that episode. Jay says so much stuff about K-Ness. It's very cool and very informative.
You can't have much more Dragon Gate knowledge on one show than these three people. So I'm definitely going to check that out. I've completely missed that, but I will definitely listen to that show.
Yeah, it was really good and informative. Like you said, if you love Dragon Gate, check it out. It's so cool. And, love seeing Jay represent for the Dragon Gate commentary after so many years of covering it online. It's just, I always just perk up at him. What, you know, like I said, maybe you're a fan, maybe you're not, of his commentary or whatever, but just the story of it all is so cool. The
story is great, yes.
Yeah, that I love seeing it every time.
Yeah, except for the retirement ceremony. I thought on this show we had a very good match with Diamante defeating Takuma Fujiwara in 7 minutes. We once again saw what a great, great base Diamante is for these young high flyers. Takuma Fujiwara, he also had a great match with Dragon Dyer recently. So these young talents in Dragon Gate, once again a great generation for them, as apparently is every generation for them now.
Yeah,
amazing stuff there. So this card overall was good. We have this new unit, the Gold Class, that is centered around Kota Minura as their gold standard, so to speak. Lots of moving parts in Dragon Gate. And this is all leading us to a card for Dead or Alive that will be happening in Aichi, in Nagoya it is. And as we are talking, I mentioned Suzumi Yokosuka. Of course, after this retirement match, he then pinned the champion, Kai, and he challenged him for the Open the Dream Gate title. And I'm reading this here as I translated it. After receiving a shout-out from his retired friend, Canis, at the April 7 Kurikan Hall event, Suzumi Yokosuka suddenly won the next day's Nagoya event from Dream Gate champion, Kai. With this momentum, Suzumi announced a challenge for the Dream Gate title, but Kai fearlessly demanded that Suzumi take some kind of risk instead of accepting the challenge. So what risk could he take? Would he put his hair on the line?
That's the logical, you know, conclusion to go to.
Will he put his friend on the line?
How could he do that? What are the stipulations of this, putting his friend on the line?
Will Canis then become the mascot of?
That would be a very, very interesting way to go. Retirement followed by a heel turn. I think they have to save that for Doi whenever he retires. He retires and then immediately turns the day after. On there. So
it has to be a turn on Yoshino, though.
Yes, I mean Yoshino will be there when he retires, so yeah. That will happen one day, but I cannot see that happening for KS now. The hair would be fine, but can you imagine bald Susumu?
No.
We don't want that.
No, we don't want
that. Well, BB Hulk was bald at one point.
True.
It happened.
That either. Yeah.
Yeah. He wore a wig when he danced his way to the ring and then took it off when he wrestled. This happened, I promise. I'm not making this up. But yes, that's a future I don't want to see. So if Susumu wins, or if that is the case, then he has to win the title at the end of the day. He must win the title.
Can you actually see him win the title?
It's not impossible. Like, we were talking about this a month ago or so, and then we were talking about Kai as champion, and I was saying they'll probably do it until after King of Gate, the tournament. Mm-hmm. And on paper, this seems like, you know, Susumu could just like have a great match and be a good challenger for him. That's kind of what
he's in that spot.
Yeah. I'd be down for it, though. if Susumu won the title. I mean, I like this Kai reign. I think it's going pretty good. That match with a Big Boss. A real Big Boss right now. But I thought that match was really good as well. And I think Kai is a great wrestler. I always like him. But Susumu, also a great wrestler. It just seems like the only way that would happen is if there's some kind of tomfoolery, like with the Kobe World main event. They want to swap the title around a bunch, because we've seen that happen before. In BB Hulk's big title reign, like 7-8 years ago, they swapped the title at like right before Kobe World, so T-Hawk could face, I think it was Yoshino in the Kobe World main event. I'm trying to remember, who did Hulk lose the title to then? I love that title reign. But the point is, they swapped the title right before Kobe World. I was wondering if they have something else in mind for Kai, but I think Kai is definitely the favorite. If they put the hair on the line, though, does it seem like Susumu is going bald to you right now?
No.
Is his hairline receding? Because I don't see that either.
I don't see that. No.
Okay, so we have to figure out. It has to be another thing. Maybe he'll say he'll leave Natural Vibes if he loses, which then he will definitely lose. He must leave Natural Vibes as soon as possible.
Maybe.
That's my prediction.
I'm not finding it right now. It's the title.
Okay. I don't know if your microphone's going out or if you're intentionally being quiet, but you are a little quieter.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, I'm just.
Oh, you're just mumbling.
I'm just mumbling. Yeah, I'm just looking up the title history on Cage Match. That is why I was just mumbling. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Yes, we'll see about that title match. There's another one.
He lost to Yoshino. He lost to
Yoshino. Yoshino.
Yeah, yes. It was 2015. T-Hawk was going to challenge Jack the World, and they swapped the title to Yoshino right before that match for some reason. Because they didn't want T-Hawk to be the champion.
It was that time around where they also did this handicap match, right? In 2014 when Naoki Doi faced whatever the heel unit's name was back then.
Or Hulk did. It was
Hulk,
five.
Hulk did, yes.
Yeah, five on one, then he lost.
Yeah,
that was, I think, Mad Blanky.
May have been Mad Blanky, yeah.
Yeah. But
it was a long time ago.
The point is, they've done stuff like this before where they challenged the title. They changed the title before Kobe World. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because, I mean, on paper, we didn't think Kai would main event Kobe World. But, you know, I have considered this. I thought that he might hold the title a little longer. I know you thought that he might just slip the title, but even before King of Gate. Just because, remember, the way they started off the title rain off was like two big guys, and we were like, why are they doing these big guys like on there so much? They should put in Dragon Gate style guys against them, and now they're doing that with Susumu, so I am happy about that overall, but I do wonder if he'll carry that title to Kobe World.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now the title match, second match on the card, is Dragon Dire defending the title against they opened the Brave Gate title against SB Kento. They recently faced off in Dragon Dire's hometown, where him and Yuki Yoshioka defended the Open the Twin Gate Championship against SB Kento and Hio. And now they are going to do the singles match. That should be a very good one.
Dragon Dire rocks. That's my guy. I love everything he does. And I think that they're going to do a great match.
Can you believe that they put this guy behind a mask?
It's just one of those things. You know, whatever happened, they realized that he needs to not be in a mask pretty quickly in his career. So, you know, maybe it was just something, it was a part of tradition or whatever. They're like, or maybe it's just simple as like, look, we could tell a story with you in a mask and losing this mask. I think everybody focuses too much on, oh, somebody's ugly or somebody's handsome. Like, you also, no matter what you look like, you have a ready-made story you can tell with a mask that you can tell without a mask. So I liked it overall. And, but a great look, like his rebranding, like with the skateboard and the friendship with Yoshioka, everything about it has been awesome to me. I like one of the best young pushes of any company, in my opinion, is Dragon Dye. And I love following his story. I love seeing him wrestle. Just one of the highlights of the whole company, in my opinion.
Absolutely. It's a great title reign. And this should be another great title match. So that's on May 5th. Also, Children's Day, of course. There's going to be a lot of shows on that day. Oh, my God. I'm going to fall behind so ridiculously on that time.
I won't.
Yes, you will all watch all the shows on one day.
I don't know about that, but I will watch them eventually. Like within the week. Let's give me a week. That's my pillow that I'm giving myself.
After that, for Dragon Gate, there is King of Gate starting on May 11, running all the way through June 2nd. And then, of course, there's the doubleheader, the big doubleheader, first Ultimo Dragon's 35th anniversary, July 30, the first day of Kobe World, and then the second day, the day thereafter. So once again, 2 days of Kobe World Pro Wrestling Festival. That is Dragon Gate. And, I want to go to a company that has a tournament going on right now, Dylan, which is All Japan Pro Wrestling. As we're talking, the third day of the Champion Carnival is over. And what do you think about the tournament so far?
Yeah, first of all, big shout out to Kickout 299, a network I was on recently. We talked about All Japan specifically on their Talking Triple Crown show. Very fun stuff on there with Jesse. She runs the Royal Road 72 account on Twitter. Lots of fun stuff. If you're a fan of All Japan, Rachel and Alicia, love them to death. We had a great time on there. Lots of fun. It seemed like everybody liked it. But first of all, before we even get to the tournament, this brings me to a question I had to bring up. I brought it up on that show, and I got attacked for it, and I need to bring it up to you as well.
Wow.
Ishikawa, pants or no pants? Which version do you like the best? This modern Jumbo-esque character or the pants? that he used to have.
I'm going with Modern Jumbo.
I'm on this island right now. I'm the lone member of Pants Club when it comes to the big
Sorry,
dog.
Dylan.
Nobody likes these pants for some reason. Nope. Although they did mention that he did bring it back for that death match he had versus Kasai last year as well. So I guess that is something there. But that's just something I needed to bring up because it's been eating at me. Which one we like better, the pants or the tights? I guess you say. I've always said, even when I wrestled, I promised myself that was like one of the first things I ever did when I entered the ring. I would never wear the like generic black tights look. Because it's so generic at the end of the day. So even though like many great wrestlers have worn that look, usually some of the greatest stars of all time, like the aforementioned Stone Cold or Jumbo Tsuruta as well. But Shibata, obviously, Suzuki as well. Minoru Suzuki. So many people have worn this look in the past. But regardless, the tournament, I think it's been good so far. I liked the first show. I thought that they had a lot of good stuff on there. None of the matches were bad on that show, Talking Triple Crown. Yoshitatsu was the one that really came under fire, I think, from all sides in that case. A lot of Yoshitatsu fans might not have been too happy. But I did try and praise him. I said Kento is probably friends with him. They had the tag title reign. And they have big matches together in the past. So you wanted them in there. I say Yoshitatsu, we talked about fashion. Yoshitatsu needs to bring back the Spider-Man. He brought back the martial arts style deal with Nomura here with the mouth guard and everything. But I thought the match was actually pretty good, to be honest with you.
The match was good, but it's just so ridiculous to think that Yoshitatsu would stand any chance in grappling against Takuya Nomura.
But isn't it somewhat admirable that he believes in himself so much?
Yes, yes, it really is. He really is a firm believer of the Yoshitatsu Kingdom.
Yes, he is.
He's the one.
Yes, he might be the top believer, but I like the match though, so I'm not gonna rip on him too much. And they shook hands afterwards. Nomura earned his respect, I guess. Match with the handshake, but he needs to bring the Spider-Man gear back. That's
Spider-Man, the Tiger, everything.
Yeah, all of it. You're totally right on there. I really loved, like, the two matches that really stood out to me was Irie and Ishikawa. Again, we talked about it earlier. I don't know where this new gear that Ishikawa's found lately, like the last few months has been, but he's all bangers right now, like lately. Everything he does is awesome. And it's like the big dog has returned from his 5-year hiatus. And this match kicked ass. I love this match. It was like the stuff you would see in a Big Japan, but like, whereas Big Japan, nowadays, it comes across kind of soulless a lot, and maybe it's because of the surrounding circumstances. Here, this was like, there was so much guts to this match, with Irie specifically, firing away at Ishikawa. It was like the most basic match, but done in such a way that it couldn't help but be awesome. And the finish was great, I thought, with Irie just pounding away on Ishikawa. And the ref was like, no more, stop it. And it was awesome. Well, I was
he was doing all these cannonballs and running elbow smashes, and it was great, yes.
I think people slept on Irie going into the tournament. I was seeing a thread our friend Rob did on Twitter, and he was asking people about their favorite matches or most anticipated matches. And I was like the only person that said an Irie match as one of his favorites, with him and T-Hawk was one of my three most anticipated matches.
Yeah.
I think people are going to, maybe they just haven't been seeing him as much lately. Maybe if they're not fans of great. Or undercards, because his TV run is good too that he had. And that's the thing. This was a surprising finish, because if you remember, Irie beat Ishikawa for the TV title in November. Yep. And Ishikawa, very unselfish here as one of the main decision makers, putting over Irie strong. I think he's a guy that's going to have he's like a sleeper MVP candidate, in my opinion. I think people weren't giving him the props.
He's having a great year.
Yeah, and he's a talented guy. at the end of the day, like, I know he's been freelance and all that for a while, but this guy has been one of the guys that we all looked at in the past. I think he's getting up there again. I also really like the main event with Aoyagi and Suwama. That felt like a big moment for Yuma beating him, and they have really good chemistry together. Suwama, very logical a wrestler. Like, he has the power, but he also is able to work with more technique-based guys like Yuma. And I thought they did a great job of the main event. Both of those, to me, were like four-star matches. I really enjoyed them a lot.
Yeah, those were probably the two most standing out matches. And the better rating actually has Kuma Arashi versus Kento Miyahara, but I guess that is because of the upset.
And that was a good match. Like, yeah. Like, don't get me wrong. I know a lot of people were speculating on Kuma maybe being like, oh, like, why is he in the tournament over Doi? And I was thinking that too. I was like, wow, I wonder why. But then I thought, well, his Champion Carnival was that really bad year, the one where it was in like September.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just didn't work out. So maybe they wanted to give him a real chance here in this tournament instead. And I think he definitely has, he made the best of it. I thought that was a really good match. Kento is on a real hot streak lately as well. I think he's another guy that we need to look at as having a great year where he is putting himself in position to wrestle these big guys and really putting his all into it. And I thought he made the best of it here against Kuma. This is another thing I was kind of speculating on the Patreon show I did about the night one, where Kento might have been somebody to be like, hey, this Kuma guy, he's big, and we could do something with him. Me and him could have a great title match. And I think that because they had teased it earlier that Kuma might be going for the Triple Crown, and then he actually won their match. So, yeah, the upset probably played a part into it, but I thought it was a good match as well on its own. I thought this is one of Kuma's best singles matches that I can remember, to be honest with you. So a great start to the tournament for everybody. Ashino and Jake Lee, that match was a little disappointing in my opinion, but it was okay. You know, just very quick, they couldn't really sink their teeth into a lot. And I'm just, Jake as this heel character is always kind of like a roadblock for me at the end of the day. But they did some good stuff here. It was okay. You know, it was the lowest rated match, I think, on the show, actually. Even T-Hawk and Honda, I didn't like the finish to T-Hawk and Honda. Like, that was a good match, but Honda, like, did his big move, and then T-Hawk just kind of rolled him up for a win.
Afterwards. I know that. Except for that, the match was really going good. I really liked this portion of this card with T-Hawk and Honda, Irie and Ishikawa and Ashino and Jake Lee, because the flow was so great. It was short matches, and all of these matches were all action matches. Yeah. And then Kento Miyahara and Kuma Arashi did a different kind of approach, with Kento being beaten down. You had some minutes to breathe in contrast to the matches before. So that was very good too. And then they came back with this great Yuma, very good Yuma Aoyagi and Zuwama main event, where Yuma debuted his new finishing move, the Fool. Dylan, are you a fool?
I am a fool, because as I mentioned on Twitter, the man himself came to me to confirm this. This is clearly a reference to one of my favorite series of games of all time, as my only cosplay in my life was based on this series as well. Persona. Clearly, every character starts that they base it off of the tarot deck deal. Everyone's arcana is different. The player character is always the fool. And Aoyagi came through big and liked my tweet comparing it to the Persona gear. So it's clear it was clear that this is a reference. We've seen him reference the comics and the movies with the end game as his deal. So he's clearly a fan of video games as well. Yuma Aoyagi, my spirit. Like, this is like my brother in wrestling right now. Not only because he's a great performer, but he has very similar interests as well. So big shout out to Yuma Aoyagi and big shout out to The Fool.
Big shout out. The Fool basically is the a swinging
it's like the rock. Yeah.
It's the key crusher. It's Loki's key crusher, basically. if he will do it to a different opponent than Zuwama, it will probably be looking better. It basically is a fisherman's buster. And well, out of all people, Yuma Aoyagi so far has, I thought, had the best matches in this early stage of the tournament, because the match he had on the second night with Takuya Nomura, that just got uploaded yesterday as we're recording, I thought the match was tremendous, with these guys just completely losing it. Yuma Aoyagi, at one point, he had Takuya Nomura lying on his stomach, and he was just pounding his back, and then he thought, this isn't it. And then he was just pounding Takuya Nomura's ass, and Nomura responded by just kicking Yuma's ass, and with this incredible slap that was heard around the world, and then the dragon suplex for the finish. So that was a fun match.
I just want somebody to cut that out about where he was pounding his ass that you said on there. So it's clear DDT is not the only promotion gaining with this anal stuff. Yes. The thing is, the fun part about this is that Aoyagi again showed his greatness and why I love him so much as a wrestler. Because he worked this match so different than how he wrestled Suwama. And I love that about him, that he's able to wrestle different styles with different people. Because this was like a complete 180. Completely being a gigantic dick to this outsider, Nomura. After being the underdog, fiery babyface one night prior against Suwama. Like, and it worked perfectly. And made, like, Nomura was a great person to do this. Like, I know, basically, like, as... how should I say this? Like, as straightforward of a babyface character, even though he's an outsider. Although, I guess, to be fair, in his opening match, he did give the middle finger after his pin, so whatever. I guess he's trying to add an edge to him, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. But more or less the most straightforward wrestler guy that you could have. When, again, black tights, very generic look, like basic style, but like great at it. And he was like the perfect person to do this heel dickhead gimmick that Aoyagi did here. And to see him fire up was very satisfying. Even though I loved Yuma, I was very happy to see Nomura not have any time for this crap and just hit his big dragon suplex to win. I was very amused and happy with that finish.
It really was good. So going back to the first show of this tournament, I really thought that this show was great. But the matches themselves were mostly good. But I really liked the flow of it all, and it left me very hyped for the Champion Carnival. So in my hype, I gave this show a 9 out of 10, but now going back, I would probably say it was an 8 out of 10 show, because the crowd really wasn't there for All Japan Pro Wrestling, and that is... It was a crowd that was into the action, but it wasn't a huge crowd. Don't get me wrong here, because the crowds have been into all of these Champion Carnival shows so far, and that is a very good sign for All Japan. Not a good sign is that they had the Kirkenhall show, the third day of Champion Carnival, which only drew 430 fans to Kirkenhall, with a very good card. They had Shuji Ishikawa and Jake Lee in the main event, and also Suwama against Sakuya Nomura. So the card was good, but the crowd wasn't there. But the reactions from the crowd have been good throughout the tournament so far. So that is definitely something that we can hold on to for All Japan Pro Wrestling, that they have been doing a good job in that direction.
Yeah, I think that I haven't seen the third show, to be honest with you, yet. It just happened this morning. But I will watch it very soon as well. And I thought the crowds were all into it at the end of the day. They did a good job for the two shows that I saw. Hopefully... things can get up. It's tough when you're like in the middle of a tournament. I think like after the first night and the last night, some of the shows in between can kind of suffer.
Right.
But between them. So I'm not trying to make excuses or anything. It wasn't a great house just based on the number. But we'll see how they... I think that's going to be where it stands. Like the end of the tournament is where we're going to be able to see how this did. And we'll be able to look back with more clarity.
You know, I'm looking forward to your review of the Jake Lee versus Shuji Ishikawa match, because... that wasn't it. It wasn't the main event of the show. It was a long match, 22 minutes. And Jake Lee clearly doesn't know who he wants to be right now. He's come back now, and in his first match back, he added this moonsault to his arsenal, which was, in and of itself, was a good idea to have something new while coming back. In this match, he also did a Hurricane Rana, so he did some face moves, but also beat down Shuji Ishikawa, and was this guy that was laughing about his opponent. He was still playing the heel shtick, but not really leaning into it completely. So this guy, I think he's completely lost in what he's supposed to be and what he wants to be. And definitely not the guy that is that people figured would carry the company. So he definitely needs a rebranding.
It's made even worse because of how good Honda is, like in the same role, and how he's like way younger, but like he's like a natural. And we're seeing Jay. This is my problem with him the whole time. Like, we talked about this last year. My main criticism of him as this heel character, this is not him. Like, this is a guy trying to be a guy that he's not. Like, this heel character is not Jake Lee. This is not the genuine article of him. And it's just, it's never worked for me. It didn't work in his title reign. And it's still not working. Like, so I hope that they do give him a rebranding. They have an opening now with Honda. I would love to see him go into a different direction after this tournament. And I think he's still, at the end of the day, I think he is still the favorite to win this tournament. Honestly, just their booking, it feels like he is the guy that has an automatic story to tell with Kento, that he never lost the title. And Yuma winning would be great, but the big show in September is way too far away for that, so they might want to hold off on that. Jake was my pick to win the tournament. I think he still will, but I agree with you. I think this Total Eclipse version of Jake is not the answer. I really like him as a performer. I know some people are down on him, and I think we were both on the same page, because some people were down on him as before all this, and I liked him. I thought he was really good in his, like, how he was before. But the change to the heel, I haven't been into it at all. Like ever. And hopefully they can get past it. And we're seeing him do some stuff, but, like, he's still, it's just not natural with him for some reason, yeah. As this character. And I think that's the problem.
Yeah. That is a big problem. And, yeah, as I said, can't go on with that. There has to be something different. Maybe they'll just throw him out of Total Eclipse. That would be the best.
That to me is the obvious answer.
Yeah.
Like, you just have Honda take over. Like, he is the guy of the future. And, like, Jake, do his, like, go back to how he was. Like, I liked him how he was. I didn't think there was a need for this change, to be honest with you. Like I said, I know some people disagree with that. I know some people thought he was boring before, but I thought he was a great wrestler, and I enjoyed that at the end of the day. Trying to add in these goofy heel stuff is not my favorite at the end of the day. Although, I will say, going back to my show on Kickout, like, you should have seen the looks I got when I said that Jake should... I thought that a good idea would be for a good story. Jake gets kicked out of Total Eclipse, and then... because I think Yuma will have to break off from Kento before, like, you know, their title match, or after the title match, or whatever. Have Jake and Kento partner up by the end of the year and go on a tag title run together. Like, the OG Next Dream is back. They kind of just redo the same story they did with Aoyagi, where he went back to Kento and won the tag titles. If you're a fan of Jake as a heel, I know that you might not like this idea, but I think that if you, like, I think that would be really cool, though. And I get what they were saying, too, on the show, because they made a great point that Jake should beat Kento first, which I think can be had in this very tournament, and be his equal. Like, I didn't mean to say it that way on that show, but I wanted it to be like, hey, these guys are now, they look at each other as equals, and now they're partnering together, and they're getting things on the right track. I think they could have a lot of great matches. Look what it did for Yuma, that team with Kento. It really elevated his stock to where he's seen as a guy who can be a top guy for All Japan. So I'm going to reissue this idea for the Eastern Lariat family out there, that Jake getting kicked out of Total Eclipse and teaming up with Kento. That's what I personally think would be cool if that happened.
So Yuma would turn on Kento again with the German suplex.
Now, that was great when it happened the first time. We don't need to revisit it. I'm not a big fan, even though I really liked him. And we saw in the match with Nomura that his heel tactics... To me, he's a way better heel character than Jake is.
Yeah, like, really.
Yeah, just being a dickhead. But you don't have to do that. They can have a respectful... Like, kind of like how Shuri and Julia did in Stardom. Where Shuri... Yeah, exactly. Like, we're rivals now. Like, we can't be on the same team. Or, you know, you could even go back to, like, kind of how Kobashi and Misawa split up in the original 90s of All Japan, where, like, Kobashi needed to get out from under this guy's shadow. And I think that's a great storyline for Yuma, that, like, I can't be behind you anymore. Like, I have to be the leader of my own group now. And I think Jake getting him back on the course would be a good way, because then I wonder where he will go by the end of the year. That's somebody that I'm really interested in seeing, even though I haven't loved his performances as a heel. I would love to see, and even if they don't do that, maybe they'll keep him as this heel character, if they keep him as something else. I'm really excited to see where he goes by the end of the year, and hopefully it's a good place, because I think he's really talented, you know? And I want to see that shown to the fullest extent it can be.
Yes, and as I'm looking at the tournament for now, and also for the rivalry, logical final would be Jake Lee against Yuma Oyagi, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that was my prediction before the tournament going in there as well. If you wanted to do that, you could even have Kento advance if you want. Like I said, if you want to give Jake a big win to elevate him, but I would rather it be Yuma than Jake, because here's the thing. You can legitimately argue Yuma can win the tournament in that case. Yeah. Yeah. And with Kento, you know Kento's probably not going to win as champion over Jake Lee. So I would rather it be Jake and Yuma. They did give Nomura a couple of wins to start off too early on. So he's kind of like the unofficial leader. Or, well, not the unofficial. He's the official leader, in fact, at this moment. Again, only three shows in. But he's a guy that I think would be very interesting to have a big match going in there. But I think it'll be Yuma and Jake overall. And that was my prediction early on, and I think it will stay. I think you're right.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Right. I like what we're doing. Like, I like what they're doing in All Japan. Yes. I continue to be impressed with how they've gone along.
One more thing. They had the Kento Miyahara versus Uwama time limit draw, 30 minutes. I thought this was a 20-minute match drawn out to 30 minutes. Except for that, it was a very good match. But the first half of it was lots of crowd brawling, and I'm not into that kind of stuff. The final minutes, though, were awesome. So this was, once again, one of those Kento Miyahara versus Uwama meat and potato matches, I'd say.
Yeah, totally agree. It was really good and fun to watch. It's just we've seen it so many times, it's hard for them. It's not like they rewrote the book on their prior matchups or anything, but it was fun. It was good. We liked what they brought to the table here. And I like, too, that remember in the tournament for the title, they actually matched up in the semifinals in January. And they did a lot different style of match. Like, it was like a 10-minute version of their match. So I like that we had that, and then we had them stretch this out to a time limit here. So it kind of made this more tolerable. But I agree with your overall assessment that it was just too long. They didn't have enough ideas. Like you said, the crowd brawling and stuff is not
happening in most Kento Miyahara matches.
Yes, he does that in most of his matches. You are completely correct with that. It was a solid, like you said, meat and potatoes is the best way to describe it. I agree.
On the topic of not being able to rewrite the book, Dylan, in the 2018
Zack this can Sabre... only be one man when you brought that up. I immediately thought of who you're going to talk about.
Zack Sabre Jr. won the New Japan Cup and ended up not defeating Katsushika Okada for the IWGP heavyweight title at the time, April 1st, 2018. 2022, Zack Sabre Jr. wins the New Japan Cup and ends up not winning the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship, April 9, 2022, against, Katsushika Okada again. A match that was very beloved on the day as it happened. It was Hyper Battle 2022. By the way, Hyper Battle is a great name. Day 5 in Sumo Hall with 4,755 fans, the best drawing card for New Japan Pro Wrestling since the beginning of the pandemic, except for their Tokyo Dome shows. And did Budokan draw better? I'm not sure right now, but it was definitely a very successful show for them. It put them back on track as it definitely for crowd size. And I thought the show was pretty good as well. Was headlined by a match between Okada and Zack Sabre. Was very beloved, as I said. For me, it was a match that I've seen before. I didn't expect a title change. They told a good story with the Zack being built up as this great threat. He worked the arm of Okada very well. He did the Zack driver, which got a great near fall. They built that up throughout the tournament also. And except for that, it was a very good title match. I agree. And that was it basically for me.
Yeah, I'm with you, honestly. Like, this was a good match, but, you know, like you said, most importantly, it's like there was no way they were going to take the title off of Okada here for Zack. Honestly, I liked what they did in the tournament with the New Japan Cup with Zack. I thought that was a pretty cool little deal there. I thought Okada was going to win and call out Ibushi, but Ibushi clearly not ready to come back yet. So this was a fine, other kind of storyline there. I really liked his match versus Shingo that Zack had in the semifinals of the New Japan Cup. I thought that was a great match. One of Zack's best, in my opinion, in New Japan in a long time. I've made my criticisms of... Huh?
Agreed.
Yeah. I made my criticisms of Zach known in the past, but I thought they really cut all that crap out, and like they really had a thread for him to follow, because technically, like, in terms of his move execution, is so strong. Like he's so great at it. I always just wish that he would focus more on a certain, like, submission than going to a million different ones on there. And here was Okada. Like you said, they tried to go to the arm a little bit here. I think Shingo, that match, it was about the neck. And Shingo's neck story had been told throughout the tournament with, like, even Chase Owens attacking his neck in his match. Here, it was more like, we're doing the arm stuff, and then Okada just did his normal stuff by the end anyway.
Yeah, it's the obvious story with someone who has a lariat finish that you go for the arm. It wasn't anything extraordinary or like out of the box thing. It was just solid stuff.
Yeah, I agree with you. There's nothing wrong with this match at all. It was a good main event. Like, you know, Okada with another strong title defense. I think that they have done a great job with his title reign. And in general, like you said, the show's drawing again. And I made this point with Kento in All Japan. And like I said, we know where I stand with Okada. If you listen to the show for any amount of time, I would say. But you have to give him, like, to me, he deserves a lot of this credit for how things are going in the last few months, because he had a big house with Naito too in February, where they had a great tour. The whole tour went up from where it was, the stuff they were doing before. And I think him as champion has gotten people in Japan more into New Japan in general. I think he deserves a bulk of the credit, actually, for that. And I think he is proving his worth as a champion and done a great job with it since he's gotten the title. So I have to praise them for that and how they built him up too. Him winning at the Tokyo Dome to now. I think all of it's been good. I know why they did the Naito stuff. I just wish that they would have. Why did they do the first match in the first place, like 2 months ago?
I have no idea.
Yeah, and it worked. Like I said, that was a great showing for them in terms of drawing the people. But why do it at all if you're just going to go back to it? You know, like you said, it doesn't make a lot of sense other than they just needed a big match for this Dome show or whatever they're doing, the big show in Fukuoka, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Fukuoka. So they're doing this big show there, and I get it. Naito's a big star. I'm the first one to be in line to tell you that. But, you know, I just wish they would have handled it better than them going back and forth than getting to this. But, you know, the title match was good. I like the tag title match, too, on the show. I think that this title reign, it wasn't super long, but I thought it was very effective. Like in the past couple of months, they've had all good matches, and they put over the right team. Cobb and Okan was the perfect, like, team to win these titles off of Goto and Yoshihashi. So I'm very happy to see if they had a good title reign. It wasn't something where they lost it right away. Again, it wasn't super long. It was 3 months instead of one. But still, though, they did some stuff with it. They had good runs in the tournament, and this Yoshihashi Cobb feud gave us some really good matches. And this was another good one. And I'm happy for Okan and Cobb. They looked very good as a team, and I thought everything about it was very effective. On there, hey, another match I like too. Did you see? Well,
before you go to the other match, perfect team to win this tag team title, and also the perfect moment to win the tag team title for Great Okan, as he has this great mainstream publicity now for saving this girl, this 10-year-old girl from this apparently drunken man who wanted to do God knows what to this girl. So great publicity for him, for New Japan Pro Wrestling, and for him as tag team champion now. Great stuff.
Thank God that he was there for that situation. So big shout out to Great Okan for that. Like, big stuff there. And he came out with his certificate that he
had
on there in his entrance. Great gimmick. Yeah, hey, check this out. look what I did. But he deserves any praise he gets for it. Like I said, big props to Great Okan for that. Like you said, great publicity, great timing. And yeah, like, good stuff there. Overall, but I guess before we get to the other match, what'd you think of the junior title match?
Yeah,
if you watched it.
I did, and thing about it, I'm automatically zoning out from all the heel shtick the House of Torture brings. But then again, there were some moments in the match that were really cool, like El Desperado nearly killed himself with this one dive into the guardrail. So they had their good moments, but it was all demolished throughout the match because it was basically it was torn into pieces, this match. They had good moments, but it was all torn apart by all the heel work that Show apparently had to do or thought he needs to do.
Yeah, I feel the same about both the title matches. Like yeah. The Denver title and yeah. This one. Yeah. I really can't even add anything more to it.
The other is very similar. You know that Evil and Hiromu, they have good chemistry with one another, and Hiromu came out with this great Evil-inspired gear that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But once again, yeah, this was the match that you'd expect from an Evil title run, with the challenger getting some hope spots, but not really any hope. So it was what it was.
I thought Hiromu should have won the title. Personally here.
Me too, but since they did it so quickly after the challenge came, I was thinking that Evil will for sure defend the title. Time will come. They had what?
I said they had the automatic follow-up storyline with right. Tong that they turned on to him too. So yeah, I'm with you on that. Yeah.
So what was the match that you were going to mention?
Yeah, the only thing, one more thing about the junior title match, Francesco Akira coming right. to New Japan. Going to be in the Best of Super Juniors. What do you think?
Oh, it's great, man. It's great to have him here. He showed when he came to All Japan Pro Wrestling that he is in for the long run, staying in Japan throughout the pandemic, working hard for his moments in All Japan, winning the junior title. And I'm looking forward to him spicing up the junior division.
Yeah, very needed fresh face. Which we're seeing more of. You know, we saw it with Strong Hearts. Had a good run last month. In multiple big matches. They even had T-Hawk and Lindemann join Shima in some of them. It's going to be interesting to see how they do it. I think in a weird way, Lindemann being the G-Rex champion kind of hurts his odds. I think they would have wanted him for the junior tournament. But that great might not want him in there as their champion, like losing to people as well. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do if one of those guys are in the tournament. Now, well,
maybe they can get him in through the tournament. Maybe if he ends up runner-up or third guy in his block, he would only need to lose to two guys, which then could in return set up title matches in great.
That would be cool. I'd be all for that. Honestly, I hope that they do that, to be honest with you, because I think Lindemann, everybody wants him there. Like you read all these reports and rumors that everyone in New Japan outside of, you know, maybe Shingo does not like Shima very much, but besides that, like, everybody loves these guys and thinks they're awesome workers. Bring them in. Like, you know, at the end of the day, like, bring these guys in, let Lindemann have a great run of people, and he'd be awesome. Like you said, maybe they can set up a title match on there. It'll be interesting because, you know, they did give Shima, you know, I mean, the only person to note he really went over was Goto, which, I mean, you know, like, it's not like they put him over anybody big, but they gave him respect in the Okada match. And, you know, that it's not like they just had him lose like a geek, like Master Wato or whatever. They had him go in with Okada, have a good match. You had him go over one of your tag champions. That's the one thing that made me wonder if they were going to have Goto and Yoshihashi retain, is I would have loved to have seen a Strong Hearts title match if they could have set that up, but they gave him respect. Everybody likes Lindemann, you know, and all of that, and T-Hawk as well. I hope that he's in the tournament. Like you said, your format was very good, but as far as Akira, my whole point of that is I think it's great that you get a fresh face in there, and they're mixing it up a little bit more with this great thing. It seems like things are warming up. It seems like everybody was happy when the Strong Hearts run in March. Hopefully we see more freshness in the division, because I think they need it, and Akira is a great talent. Everybody knows, if you listened to this show before, we loved him in All Japan. We think he has a lot to bring to the table, and I wonder how far they want to go with him. They gave him a big spotlight. He's like the guy that they've spotlighted heading into the tournament, which is very interesting. Similar to when Dragon Lee came into the Best of Super Juniors right before, they really put a spotlight on him as well. It seems like they're giving the same treatment to Akira here. I think that's great. He deserves it. Big shout out to him.
With borders opening up, I can see a lot of great talent coming in for the Best of Super Junior. Maybe Dragon Lee will be back too. Who knows?
That'd be great.
Yes, and of course, on this show, they also announced that the G1 Climax will be returning to Natsu. It was mentioned multiple times on that video. It will be returning to the summer, starting on July 16. Dylan, which also means that after 2 long years, we will be returning to reviewing G1 Climax shows together.
Ah, that's awesome. Like, that's great. That's right. You know, we're going to have your break on there.
Yes.
It's going to be a hell of a tournament when that happens. I'm more fired up about that than the tournament itself right now. So big shout out to all the listeners. We got some big stuff coming for you.
Done.
And cannot wait for that tour. Although we give and we take. We're given this opportunity to do these shows again. But unfortunately, they've taken away by giving us more briefcase matches for the following months. That's right. I think they still had the briefcase the last 2 years anyway.
They did.
But they didn't. It was only like one match for them usually. So now we're going to get more. And we do not want more of the briefcase. That is one thing that has always been known about this show. But yeah, G1 back in the summer. Looks like Ed Best Super Juniors back in May. Everything's getting back to normal. No more Olympics stuff for Japan, so this is how it's going to be going forward.
Yes. So, anything else on this show?
Yes. The best King of Pro Wrestling title match of all time. Taichi versus Toru Yano. The sumo match.
I voted for this.
You voted for this?
Yes, I wanted this to happen.
What was the other option?
I have no idea.
You didn't even care. You just wanted the sumo match.
Yes.
Yes, this was a lot of fun. Like, I liked this. Like, I love the idea. This, to me, is what this title should be about. Like, have different styles. And, like, similar to when they had the Okan and Yano amateur, like, style match, this title should be about different styles of wrestling depending on who the champion is. And you should have a submissions guy. You could have a sumo match if you want. You could change the rules around and work different styles into the context of whatever unique match you want to tell. And I love that they did that with this. It was so cool. It was short. It was like, what, 4 minutes or so? Like here, bad Taichi getting the title. I was into this. This is a lot better than like the blindfold, the dog K. Like, we don't need that crap. Like, this is the kind of stuff we should be having there. So I was this was the happiest I think I've ever been for a Taichi win in my life here. But he did a good job, and I thought he did a pretty good job even in the tournament. You know, he had that match with Okada. So hopefully he's feeling a little – I mean, I know that this title is a, like, undercard belt, to be generous. But still, a title's a title. You give him something.
But he called out Shingo Takagi.
Exactly. And that gives me hope that this title is heading in the right direction going forward, because these are guys that could do some inventive stuff. Shingo coming from Dragon Gate, you know he's got some ideas. I know he's a big fan of AEW on there. He was on the
ECW too.
And ECW as well. Why not on there? Listen, nobody's perfect. Okay. But Shingo is as great of a wrestler as you could find. And I know they're going to mix this up and have some great stuff going forward. So I was very happy to see this match, and the title, the challenge, all of it was good. Hopefully the King of Pro Wrestling title is on the rise.
Hopefully so. Yeah, let us look at the big card then for Wrestling Dontaku in the Fukuoka PayPay Dome. 8 matches. Tatsumi Fujinami teams up with Los Ingobernables de Japón with Shingo Takagi and Hiromu Takahashi to wrestle Zack Sabre Jr., Taichi, and Takamichi Noku. Dylan, at some point, I think Fujinami has to decide whether he's L.I.J. or whether he has a strong heart.
But nobody can tell me this man doesn't represent the spirit of L.I.J.
Yes.
I mean, listen, we got the dragon and the dragon with Shingo and Fujinami. So what a tag team that could be.
You think he's strong?
I would be so down if they had a tag title shot like Fujinami and Shingo.
Yes. That would be cool. Special singles match. Tangaloa versus Yujiro Takahashi. Wow.
Well, big singles match. They made a big deal about them, Takahashi accepting them.
Right. Tangaloa and Tamatonga, they put on the New Japan Pro Wrestling Lion Mark shirts for the first time in a long time after they turned to the Bullet Club. They now are back with New Japan. Tangaloa, for the first time, actually has worn the New Japan Lion Mark logo. I think they built that turn up very well. They, one step at a time, they built up that the Guerrillas of Destiny are now a face tag team. And I actually am looking forward to them being a face tag team because I think they bring a lot of energy, a lot of fire to their tag team matches. And I hope that they are better as a face tag team than they are as a heel unit, because that didn't really work out for me in the long run. I got new hope for these guys.
Yeah, I thought they worked together pretty well at first as a heel team, but then things just dragged on and on and on. And I think a lot of people, any kind of hope you would have when they, when Tama Tonga had that G1 run, I think that pretty much killed any potential interest they could have had. This has been a long time coming, in my opinion. I said they just needed to go somewhere else. Just to, nothing against them. It's just to have a fresh start. But instead, they've turned them face, which I also think is a great idea. Because, like you said, it gives them a fresh start. And we're going to see what they bring to the table here. Will Tama Tonga go back to his original attire that he had there? Is what I want to know. that he had as a young guy. That's what I want to know. But yeah, I'm into this too. I really like Tongaloa as a worker as well. And Tama Tonga as a babyface gives me new hope. He had a pretty decent run last year in the G1 as well. He was nowhere near what he was a few years ago. He actually had a pretty solid little run there. And I think that they're going to have a good run again. Let's see how they do it. Like you said, they built it up really well, too, with Tanahashi, everything going on. I'm cool with that, honestly. I'm cool with all this.
Yeah. IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Title 609, Ryusuke Taguchi and Master Wato defend against Yoshinobu Kanemaru and Doki. This really has been a great way of giving Master Wato a push. He has looked very good besides Taguchi, so I'm looking forward to this match.
Yeah, I'm into this as well. Doki getting a title shot. That's what I care about. Doki getting a title shot. Shout out to them. Seems pretty obvious, but it's the junior tag titles. You never know what's going to happen.
Heavyweight tag team title is going to be a three-way match. Great Okan and Jeff Cobb defend against the former champs, Bishamon, Yoki Goto and Yoshiashi, as well as the Bullet Club team of Bad Luck Fale and Chase Owens. Match sounded good until I read the last part.
Yeah, I really liked their first match, and they made it worse on this show.
Yeah,
so,
thank you.
Great job. it seems like to me that Goto and Yoshiashi are there to drag out this feud. Like, one of them will eat the pin, and then they'll go to a Fale and Owens regular challenge. Great.
Wow. Super into it. Well, never open weight title, King of Darkness Evil against Tama Tonga. First opportunity for Tama Tonga to really show his face side. He will unfortunately be dragged down by Evil's heel shtick, so that should be a solid, okay match at best.
And this might, my expectations for this are through the floor. Like, there's going to be so much nonsense in this match with Tonga versus Evil that I could not...
Will or will not, let's give an assessment to this. Will or will show not switch the lights off?
My perhaps most hated spot of New Japan. I say I've got faith in them. They have to turn the lights on and off in this. They got to do it. They cannot leave Tonga out in the cold. He has to experience this. This is like his initiation into the New Japan side. He must suffer.
What's the over-under? Over or under two times switching the light off?
I'll go. I think it's just going to be once. We'll be conservative. I think there's going to be, to make up for that, there will be 30 interferences, though. That's the over-under for this match.
I see. El Desperado defends against Taiji Ishimori on paper. This should be a great match.
Yeah, I'm into it. Hopefully everything goes okay. Is there any, news on the Bullet Club and House of Torture? Because it was kind of like they all came together when they did that turn on G.O.D. and Jado, for whatever reason. So does that mean Ishimori is going to adopt this bullcrap gimmick as well? Because if so, this could get ugly. But it just is a match, like you said, the talent is there. If
Sho is going to prepare Taichi Ishimori for this match, that's going to be crap.
Yeah, exactly. So we have to keep that in mind. Be prepared for a bad match, but it's possible that it could be good as well. They're both very good wrestlers.
Zanada's first run with an IWGP Heavyweight Championship with the U.S. title ended sadly in the injury that he suffered against Ospreay. And now Ospreay is in the decision match to crown a new champion against Hiroshi Tanahashi. Will Ospreay win?
Yeah, I think Ospreay's taking the title.
I think so too. Yeah.
Next Tanahashi's are, you know, it's been there and done that with Tanahashi and Ospreay. I guess it would make sense too to have Okan and Cobb as tag champions and him have a title as well.
Right.
I think Akira is getting built up for something big too. They could do something where they really push this faction, this empire, over the summer and make that a big deal if they want to go as far as they can with it.
Yeah, and it makes sense for Ospreay to have the title to go to the US with it as well.
Yep.
Now, Tanahashi will also go to the US occasionally, of course, too, but Ospreay has been a big staple of Strong over the last year.
I like Tanahashi trying to work his own angle to face CM Punk and Bryan Danielson in AEW.
Yes, it would be great.
So if we do that, let's get the title out of the way for that, have Ospreay win it, and let Tanahashi wrestle Bryan Danielson is what I really want to happen.
That would be cool. Yeah, the G1 climax. There are a lot of opportunities this year with American talent being able to come in.
Do you think any AEW guys will be in the best Super Juniors?
Sure, why not? I mean, when we talked about that, we talked about DDT and AEW working together. We said that guys like, for example, a Private Party could come over that don't have anything lined up right now. So why not?
You need one for this Best of Super Junior, in my opinion. I don't think they're going to send more than one person.
No.
For this tournament. You know, it's interesting when you look at the roster, who would they want to send over? Would be something. They might even just say, oh, it's a Ring of Honor guy coming over that they want they set things up. Like Swerve would be like, that would be like my guy if he could come in there.
Sammy Guevara, I could see.
Yeah, that would be interesting. On there, will Tay come or Ty Conti come over as well?
Maybe.
Why not put her in Stardom for a tour?
Yeah, why not? She can be X.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Another martial artist as well. Right. That could we have cracked the code right now of what's going on with Bushiroad?
But, well, the code clearly has not been cracked because Okada is facing Naito again. Did you see this picture, or the promo picture they had on the press conference? Even I read it on Bert's Twitter. Even Naito looks tired of this match.
Yeah, you know, well, we kind of talked about this earlier, but it's the title match.
It is what it is. This brings me to the question, will they still do it in the Tokyo Dome?
I don't know. Like I said, it depends on how things goes in the future, I guess, but I think we can safely check this off the box for next year, I would say, for the next Wrestle Kingdom main event, but you never know what Gato's up to.
Yeah, I guess that this would have been this would have been Ibushi's opportunity, I think. I think that's what most people think, that Ibushi would have won the New Japan Cup and faced Okada.
Yeah, it sucks because you know Naito's not winning the title here. Yeah. Or you at least strongly suspect it.
Think they call an audible?
Just to break things up, I think that that has to be in play where they could do something, and that would be a big moment if Naito won it. But to me, I just feel like they've gone this far with Okada. It's been pretty successful so far by all intents and purposes. I don't think there's a need to change course right now. I think they should just go with whatever they had in mind, you know, at the end of the day. But it would be a nice surprise if they did that. It would be cool for Naito to have another title reign.
It would be a surprise. It would like it would be something different.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be cool. Mm. But I think Okada's gonna win at the end of the day. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. That is basically it. That's everything that I have to.
Absolutely. Glad we got the time to do this show. We talked about so many different promotions.
Oh, yeah.
So that's cool. I always enjoy that. So much happened with so many different places. Thank you to all the listeners out there for taking the time. As always, I really appreciate that. And hopefully we have a lot more stuff to talk about in the future. I'll always be on Patreon doing every single match of the Champion Carnival. And the shows, they actually don't have that many thus far. Like, you know, each night has three or four matches on there. Usually the first match had like six, I think, but the other ones are pretty, you know, digestible. We got some cool stuff coming up in the future. Stardom doing their Cinderella tournament, every single match of that as well on there. you get all the companies, really. If they're in Japan, I'll cover them. Even if they do a big show in America, I'll cover that too. So much fun stuff to talk about on there. Again, if you haven't checked it out, go to Kickout299, listen to my appearance on Talking Triple Crown. And they got a lot of good stuff on there too. It's a great website, great thing they've got going on there. So check all that out. Thanks everybody who voted for March Madness. That's over now. And I've had a lot of fun watching wrestling. I'm really fired up with everything going on again. I'm feeling good about wrestling in general, and hopefully everybody enjoyed the show, and we catch you next time as well.
Absolutely great closing words from you, Dylan. I want to thank everybody for listening. Check out our Patreon, patreon.com/EasternLariat. Check us out on Twitter, twitter.com/EasternLariat. And this is it. Goodbye.
Sayonara.
This is the MLW Radio Network.